The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report. With Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Tuesday, November 6th. Now later in the day than it was earlier today. This is special coverage. Special coverage. Right. Midterm elections 2018. Live. Polls already closed in Indiana. And, Indiana. And soon to be other places. Kentucky. Where did I put my goddamn lists? Son of a bitch. All right, folks.
Good evening,
well, at the
folks.
Very least,
we're ready.
We're ready for this. We are so ready.
Yeah.
We have an enormous amount of alcohol in the studio. We are prepared for things to go south.
To talk about Ted Cruz.
Or north. And in studio, we already have our first guest, Nomi Kantz. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Sam. This is exciting.
Now, Michael is here, and Brendan is here, and Matt. And Jamie is available on Trap House, apparently. And we're going to have others coming onto the program within hours or moments. And I should say, let's just start with this notion of it going north or south. Obviously, I'm being metaphorical, but I just saw something that I thought was pretty stunning. And Nomi, I want to get your take on this. I think, Michael, you heard it too. Chuck Todd was on MSNBC saying that because of the performance of Gillum and of Stacey Abrams, presumably he's just going over polls, right? But they have polls internally. They know stuff now that they're not telling us. Mm-hmm. They may be right. They may be wrong. We don't know. But there's two things that about that. One, he started saying that maybe the lesson between these folks and Beto is, in Kentucky 6th is now Amy McGrath. Ooh. Is 20 points. Wow. With 60% in. That may have just been a county.
Yeah.
Okay, that was just a county.
Because
if that ended up being the actual,
don't jump the gun.
That would be crazy.
We just read counties all night. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, exactly. I apologize for that. We're going to give you a county by county breakdown. But Chuck Todd said maybe this is a lesson for Democrats. Maybe he didn't even say maybe. He said this could be a lesson for Democrats going forward in the South. And the two things struck me. One is they don't go out on a limb saying that if they think they have data that says Gillum's going to lose, Abrams is going to lose, Beto O'Rourke's going to lose. They may have data in there that suggests that they think they're going to win. But so that is interesting to me. But what's also interesting to me is that Chuck Todd is saying, Democrats in the South, your path may be to the left. And, well, yes.
Oh, my God. It's like they're finally figuring out that people want some damn health care.
Well, yeah. But it's stunning to me that Todd, of all people, is coming to this conclusion.
I'm talking with people like, Anoa Chonga and Ben Dixon for years have said the future of the Southern Democratic Party with – if you fuse together the white people in the South that will still vote Democratic with the fact that it is a broad multiracial coalition, the Southern Democratic Party goes from being the conservative dregs of the party to actually potentially more left than the rest of the country.
All right, so we have our first Jennifer Wexton. Destroyed, shattered Barbara Comstock. Now, that's not a huge surprise. There was a lot of like sense that Comstock was in trouble, but
low energy.
56% in. You know, it's hard to say whether or not that is as devastating as it appears right now. But if those numbers hold, that's crazy. 73% in Florida. Oh, that's Palm Beach County. Son of a, he's doing
that. Karnacki's going to get you.
He Karnacki's going
to
get you.
He needs to change the color. It's the black. That's what's confusing.
Yes, it really
is.
It
should be like yellow.
But that's not terribly surprising in those counties. That's where Gillum's got to really run it up. But he is right now outpacing. Well, Clinton, but not so much in Miami-Dade. So it's too early to tell. It's too early to tell at this point. So,
what drives me nuts about this, though, is and I don't know when polls closed in Florida, but you know polls are closing in New York in
I think polls are still open.
They're still open. Yeah, they shouldn't even be doing
polls
this.
Polls are still open
right.
in Florida.
I think they should just sit on their seat and be like, we don't know.
Stay online.
Stay tuned.
Yeah, vote, you know? I mean, I think there's some truth to that. I don't think that there is any, at least in this election, I don't get the sense that there are people in New York City or anywhere for that matter going like, man, I'm watching MSNBC right now. But I think I'm going to hold back. Like, this is my theory. Is it if anybody turns on MSNBC, they're already voting.
That's
they
true.
Voted or they're already voting. If that's they know true. The names of Steve Kornacki, they're voting.
That's about right.
Right? Like, it's not
East Village Steve Kornacki.
I'm going to spend my night with Steve Kornacki and not actually.
Well, I think if you have to do a trade-off between getting in your vote or missing a Chris Matthews Kennedy analogy,
that
I mean,
that's
oh my God.
Keep it real.
So the good news is Tim Kaine has won. Bernie Sanders has won.
I'm shocked.
Not terribly surprising.
Wasn't there some, like, I feel like you
Let's
would know this.
Let's put that sound down just a little bit
wasn't
more.
Wasn't there some, like, really, really intense Hillary stands that were talking about going to Vermont to challenge Bernie, though?
Well, Al Giordano.
Yes, but then he got in a sexual scandal or something. He had a Me Too scandal.
Wait, okay,
he
I didn't even know about that. I thought there was actually a Hillary staffer that wanted to do it.
He was ready for Hillary. Or ready? No. He was women for
he
Hillary.
He was Hillary men.
Hillary men. One of the, weirdo...
Yeah.
Thank
involved.
You for clearing up the nuances of the
I'm on the Al Giordano beat.
Yeah, Matt's.
You know, I had wondered why I did not hear so much from him. Like, there's just voices that just seem to have disappeared from my life in some way, and I forgot about them.
The bank accounts went dry.
Back.
That's what happened.
So, all right. So, Nomi, first off, speaking of running, I don't know if you're aware of this. You are, Michael, you all right? What's going on?
No,
I'm not. Michael already.
Whoa.
It's not even,
already.
It's not
I'm
even
already,
8 p.m.
I'm already
on the East Coast,
it.
And Michael's already.
Yeah,
pouring
saying, right, Gillum, the counties are looking good.
So, Nomi, you are a candidate. I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but you are a candidate for public advocate in New York City. What is the public advocate?
So the public advocate, this is perfect timing because for the rest of the night, people are going to be paying attention to the polls. So I might as well get it in while I'm here. So the public advocate of New York is a position that it came out of a real estate scandal. There have only been 4 public advocates, and it's essentially a position that's the watchdog of New York City. It oversees the city council. It oversees, is a check on the mayor's office and other agencies. It's there to push the narrative and the platform for the people of New York. I don't know if it's necessarily been used to its fullest capacity in the past, but I think every single public advocate we've had, and there's only been 4, have used it in their own way. I'm hoping in this day and age with real estate really creating the income inequality in the city that's worse than anywhere else in the country at the worst point in history, that I will be a watchdog for the people, the only person in the race as of now and possibly into the future who doesn't take real estate money, has never taken real estate money, and is unafraid and untethered to any political machine. So,
I mean, my understanding is that is one of those positions where you can make of it what it is, a function of the person, you know, more so maybe than any other position, certainly in municipal government. I mean, there was an argument that Zephyr Teachout was going to do something with the AG's office, the state AG's office, that maybe pushed the boundaries of where it's been or hasn't been in about 30 or 40 years. Mm-hmm. But this is a new position. it's going to involve taking on a lot of powerful people. I've seen you get into fights with different people, regardless of party. And yeah. so I get the sense that you're well suited for something like yeah. that.
And if I can toot my own horn, I have a pretty good record on this. I took on the DNC. They put me on that reform commission, and then we reformed it. Is it perfect? No. But it is way more transparent than it ever was. That was my little pet case. We got rid of super delegates on the first ballot. When I was in the platform committee, we fought for the most progressive platform in the Democratic Party, and we got it. We really have been pushing very hard.
And we should say, that platform has been adopted. I mean, I don't want to say... Well, I think we could say widely. I mean, today we spoke to Sean McKelvey, and he said 50% of congressional candidates, depending on how you define it, but 50% are pushing Medicare for All across the entire House candidates, and that's pretty amazing.
Yeah. I think the polls show that it crosses party lines. I mean, the Bernie Sanders platform is the platform that is going to bring back those voters who either stayed home in 2016 or, God forbid, voted for Trump. So instead of playing blame games and pitting people against each other, we should be talking about what kind of platform is going to make most lives better for Americans at this point when income inequality is soaring. And I think as the New York City public advocate, not only do we have to push the platform, we have a fairly progressive city government. But there are some issues that even our most progressive members are just afraid of taking on. And real estate right. is the number one. I mean, big That's real estate, one. They went after Julia Salazar hard. Now, you know, she could have handled it better, of course. But when you start to talk about real estate, you put a target on your back. I've had a target on my back for the last several years. I'm sure they're going to go after me, but we have to be honest with ourselves. There's too much at stake here. It is absolutely unaffordable to live in New York City. People aren't making high enough wages. The subways don't work. The Board of Elections doesn't work, as we saw today. The infrastructure of the state and city are crumbling. And meanwhile, you have Wall Street that keeps getting, you know, bailed out and taking pay raises, and the real estate industry, which is driving everybody out.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
I agree with you 100% that real estate and housing is definitely the number one. And I like the way you laid it out, because it interconnects with all the other major transportation reform. But on a note that I think is relevant for New York, it won't be center in the campaign, but it's relevant. You've done great coverage on Puerto Rico.
Oh,
and
yeah,
obviously New York has an important relationship with Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. And we still see Puerto Rico is still kind of ground zero of colonialism and austerity. What can you do in terms of the Puerto Rico relationship?
Wow, it's like you're in our office taking notes. We are getting ready to unveil our Puerto Rico platform.
Sweet.
I'm leading with that because I did spend a good chunk of the last year in Puerto Rico. And I do think as New Yorkers, where a good chunk of our population is from Puerto Rico.
Six borough,
exactly.
No doubt.
But even further than that, Wall Street, the bondholders, the people who are making money off of the colonization of Puerto Rico and the disaster capitalism, that is here. We sometimes, it's as New Yorkers and politicians go around in every borough and talk to different folks, we forget that we have a responsibility, a duty to the rest of this country to really check Wall Street, which is here. It's like it doesn't exist. It's like its own little island. And it is, in a sense.
And how many politicians here go to Puerto Rico parades and then
decimate
Puerto Rico in terms of policy?
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, like, from a practical standpoint, like, what do you do? Like, when we talk about real estate, and I think anybody who knows New York, particularly New York City politics, knows that the biggest corrupting force is real estate money. I mean, and everybody, regardless of politicians that I have liked or disliked, they all kowtow in some way to the real estate money.
Right.
Don't even get me started on Mark Green. But with all that said, what and when you talk about Puerto Rico, when you talk about Wall Street, like from a practical standpoint, what can you do? What can you do?
So this is the conundrum of the Office of the Public Advocate. Every year the budget is set. Every year the budget is different. It's set by the city council speaker and the mayor. They work together on that. Aside from that, the powers are semi-limited of the public advocate. Is there to call out, to be a voice, to use its platform in the best way possible, to push back? There are litigation, you know, they can't litigate within the office, but they can hire litigators. But I think from my perspective, as a former investigative reporter, as a former watchdog, a reformer, I want to use the office to investigate in ways that others have not done, but with, you know, a staff, a very large staff. I mean, I was an investigative reporter of one. I didn't have researchers, and I did stuff that, you know, the office never did. So, for instance, with Wall Street, you know, I'll take it. There's an idea we had where we thought we could we collect all this public data, all this data when the LLC loophole is a perfect example. You know, real estate firms are using this LLC loophole in the state to give an extraordinary amount of political contributions to candidates.
Right.
And they'll house these LLCs. There'll be hundreds of LLCs housed in one building or one, you know, apartment in like Queens or Brooklyn. And it's very hard to figure out who owns these LLCs, who the people are. Now, if you track all the data together and you collect it and you create a site that makes it easier for reporters, they don't have to FOIA, they don't have to go down to City Hall and go through records. If you collect that data, and we've looked into it a bit, and it's not as difficult as you'd think, and you create the patterns and you show, oh, well, this lawmaker, this city councilman is accepting money from this LLC, which is housed in this place, and this is this person, and this person has this agenda. It starts to tell the tale of what these connections are and who these people are and what their agendas are. That's a simple tool that would be great for reporters in New York.
Right.
Investigative reporting is very expensive. It could be good for a lot of media companies, but it's also a great tool for citizens. That's just one simple thing that we
can
do.
So it's almost a it's a hybrid between an ombudsman and an inspector general in a way. And in some respects, you're both able to do investigations and set up I guess data sets and data points to essentially subsidize the investigations by other entities.
Right.
Maybe it's trial lawyers. Maybe it's reporters. Maybe it's other public interest groups.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to go after you hard.
Public interest groups.
Yeah, the public interest groups.
Common cause.
The common cause is really alarmed your proposals.
We're going to tune in back into this stuff because Gwinnett County is sort of the key county for Georgia, and Kornacki was talking about it for a moment, but before we go back to that, because they're still counting votes, what's going on with that T-shirt?
So I walk in, and you know, I've been wearing this T-shirt all day, so I kind of forgot.
I was like, is your real name Kathy?
No.
That would make it so much easier next time you're on my show. Hey, Kathy.
Hey, Kathy.
Hey.
My
Kathy
mom.
Smith, thank you for being here.
Kathy Kahn's Twitter is blowing up right now. My mom's like, what's going on? Who is talking about
everybody
me?
Everybody knows you as Nomi. Why would you run as Kathy?
So my mother was a lawmaker in Erie County, New York, near Buffalo, for a few years. And she ran the first time, I think, in 1998. And I was, you know, 14 years old. And I was going through my T-shirts today. And I was like, oh, my gosh, what kind of shirt can I wear today? I was like, well, Standing Rock was 2 years ago, but it's not really the moment. I mean, look. And then I found this old shirt at the bottom of my drawer, which, you know, it's changing color a little bit. It's aged. 20 years old this year.
Wow.
My mom's first election. And then she lost. And then the next one, she lost because it was 9/11. It was the primary. And then the third one, she won by like 77% in a 3-1 Republican area. Why? Because she had one of those platforms that crossed party lines. So there's a lot of lessons there. And she knocked on every door.
And you grew up in Buffalo?
I did.
That's freezing cold up
there. It is.
I've never been there.
And so
you should go.
Was it Tony Eason who went there, or was it Bledsoe? It was Bledsoe.
I don't know sports, but I remember that name in like newscasts because you can't escape it.
Are you learning sports stuff for your campaign?
Sure.
All right. Well, let's.
Yeah.
So we are now.
I know that Boston Red Sox are not a team I should be
right. Yeah.
Fans of.
Well, not in this studio. You gotta play to your crowd.
The mayor is a Boston Red Sox. That's like,
dude, take
how
it
can
easy.
You even get away with
take,
that?
Just take it easy.
I
think
don't have really
like
strong opinions.
Take it, Blozio sucks in a lot of key regards, that's super brave of him.
That is one of the best. That's one of the best features of the Mr. Mayor.
Yeah.
I will say. So, all right, we're at now 22 for the House to turn to the Democrats, and you know there is. There's really not a lot necessarily right now that we can glean.
The most fun part of this time of the night is looking in at the ticker and seeing some of the faces of some of the people that actually we elect to Congress.
Exactly. I was just thinking,
my name's Hal.
Oh, our next
I'm
president,
really
President Sherrod Brown.
Jared Brown with a comfortable win.
Yeah.
Does that help Cordray? Or is he in his own zone?
I mean, it doesn't. It definitely helps. Right. I mean, how much, it's hard to know. But, you know, if you go back a year ago, people were worried about Sherrod Brown.
Yeah.
And people were worried about...
He voted for some of his cabinet stuff, right? Wasn't there something like that where Elizabeth... Ben Carson. Didn't Sherrod Brown
vote? Elizabeth Warren did. Definitely.
He voted. She did too, because I'm good.
I do not understand. There's no way you can defend that.
I was a public advocate once.
Really?
You can read it in my book.
That slipped through my research.
After neurosurgery.
Where's our research team? You're fired.
The big issue right now is Brian Donnelly. There is 31% in. He is losing significantly. It's unclear to me, you know, at this point, what the you know, what's in Indiana. But if Donnelly loses, be concerned. Because Donnelly was one of those guys who was right on the cusp. It's obviously it's a red state, but and as red states go, that's not necessarily the case when you're talking about specific congressional seats in there. And outside of like Pennsylvania, New York, and California, you don't need many. Mm-hmm. In terms of what's going to anticipated to flip in blue states, you don't need many. You already picked up one in Virginia. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard to imagine the Democrats not picking up the House at this point. When you see that number coming out of Virginia and Comstock losing by, I don't know, 15%, that's pretty stunning. But on the Senate side, you know, if a guy like Donnelly is losing, then you may say goodbye to McCaskill.
We heard good things about McCaskill today, of all people,
Cordray, on
Majority Report in terms of her ground game. But I have a question for both of you guys about Donnelly, if I could ask. I agree completely that it's just a numbers game, and elect the Democrat in a place like Indiana, no matter how, or West Virginia for that matter, no matter how terrible they are. But, you know, even Joe Manchin, as far as I understand, didn't flirt with getting rid of birthright citizenship. Yeah. And when Donnelly did that, my concern is not my purity of being able to support him or not, but I do feel like when a Democrat says that, that does turn the overturn window. I know he walked it back, but I'm saying that did.
Would also suggest that he has internal polling that thinks that he's in deep trouble.
Absolutely. No doubt about that. But I'm just talking about the general, because I don't even think it's like debatable, this idea of like elect Democrats, even if they're bad Democrats. But that was the one thing that I saw that I was like, wait a second. I think in the national press, it means something different if a Democrat, even if they're a right-wing Democrat from Indiana, puts birthright citizenship into play. And that disturbs me.
This was the big problem, frankly, with Joe Lieberman. Yeah. Joe Lieberman,
right,
and it was even worse because he was a blue state Democrat,
right.
And he would go on Fox News and he would carry the Republicans' message, and everything suddenly became bipartisan because Joe Lieberman was, you know, willing to sign on with John McCain. And now Joe Lieberman, I think, is like literally, you know, offering, he's a little bit mad about Ned Lamont because Ned Lamont was the guy who knocked him out of the box.
Right.
But he was, I think, offering to help in the transition or
Alan Dershowitz. He is Alan, whatever that category is.
Jewish?
Well, no, I mean, but not just that. Like, he's from Connecticut.
Just a horrible, horrible person.
Joe Lieberman is almost, in some respects, worse. I mean, because, you know.
Because Alan Dershowitz helped get OJ off.
He's a gadfly. Well, he's just a gadfly. Right, exactly.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
He's a gadfly.
Yeah.
He's doing his job as a lawyer. I understand that. But Joe Lieberman, I mean, I'm biased because I the depth of my dislike of Joe Lieberman is I think greater than anything else I could ever assess.
Are you from Connecticut?
Mark Green?
No, Mark Green's up there too. But
but it's
Joe
a great
Lieberman,
conversation for me to be.
No, Joe.
Yeah.
Lieberman.
Yeah. Anyways,
for
check out No Beaky's policy platform.
Mark Green used to
platform.
Be public advocate.
Yeah,
he was also. I don't
and
know.
And he was considering endorsing.
I went to college
Thanks,
in
Sam.
Connecticut, and I remember seeing ads from Joe Lieberman standing in front of the highways talking about how the tolls are gone. And he was attorney general. He had nothing to do with the tolls being gone, but he was that type of guy.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, no, I've...
And that's how you became hateful.
That was where it started. That's okay. Where I was... That's where I was...
that's an interesting thing to be...
I was Joe
hate
Lieberman,
him more than anybody
I
else.
I was about. Joe Lieberman skeptical at that point.
Okay.
And then back during the war, it was basically the war.
No, but I mean, he's real... Didn't he also, like... Because I read a piece when he
Donna
retired.
Shalala. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, she went in.
Shalala...
I can't...
There's another example.
This.
People what thought that Shalala was... going to get destroyed.
Well, it's her charisma.
But she early on in the race, she looked really bad. Now, I bet you Donna Shalala is benefiting significantly from Gil.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that she was somebody who people were very worried about 3 to 6 months ago. People were very concerned that Shalala was just not campaigning well.
Yeah, I have a slightly funny story. I was on a flight last year before she announced she was running. And the woman next to me looked exactly like Donna Shalala. And she was talking about politics, and she had like things like on her screen that were like DNC, blah, blah, blah. And I was talking to her, and the whole entire time we talked to each other as if she were Donna Shalala. And then at the end of the conversation, she did work for the DNC, and that's why she acted like she knew me. And she was not Donna Shalala. And then I said, well, so nice seeing you, Donna. And then she's like, who?
Oh, my God.
And then she said she's always, people always think that she's Donna Shalala. So it was like a 2-hour flight where I was talking to Donna Shalala.
It'd be funny if it was like a Coen Brothers movie and it was actually just like a complete imposter.
That would have been.
Like someone had nothing to do with the DNC or anything.
It was very strange.
That is
super
strange.
I've never been in a situation like that before.
Fidel Cashflow on the IMs.
That's good. I like that one, man.
Oh, Indiana, God. Not over yet. Fort Wayne, Gary, Evansville, and Indianapolis still not fully in. Joe from Raleigh on the IMs.
What split times mean? Does anybody know that?
Great news in North Carolina. Democrats winning all North Carolina Supreme Court and Court of Appeals seats.
That's big.
Linda Coleman
That's
is beating.
Really,
yeah, the courts in North Carolina.
Fat
yeah,
white Republican really Congressman like. George Holding in the Raleigh era. Looks promising
Ooh,
in the North Carolina General Assembly. We shall see. It's early yet.
That's a hard one, that Tennessee one.
You, me, Bear Trap. I voted in Vernon, Connecticut today, waited for half an hour, and never before have I waited in line to vote, even in 2016. Hopefully a good sign. You know, we get a lot of these, and I've heard a lot of reports like this, but I feel like I hear a lot of reports like this every year.
Yeah. Mm.
I mean, that is true, but I did literally wait in line in Brooklyn, and where I am, I have absolutely never seen
this
that.
Is the first time I've waited.
Yeah, so I will say,
New York had an
sure.
issue. Yes, the turnout's higher, but a lot of these machines, I don't know if you guys have read, the purging wasn't as much of an issue as it was during the primary, but the machines, the scanners that took your ballot weren't catching the ballot because they were wet. That's the excuse the Board of Elections has. Now, you know what would solve that? If we had a Democratic Senate and could pass early voting and voting reform, and then the Board of Elections could be funded and not overwhelmed.
Mail-in ballots.
Exactly.
That's what I say.
So simple.
Let's go to the phone, shall we? You're calling from a 225 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from? 225 area code. Who's this?
Oh, hey, man. Steven from Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
What's going on, Steven?
Oh, not much, man. Am I live?
You are.
Or is this like a oh, cool. I don't know if y'all did screen callers or not.
No, man.
There's like a little bit of lag. Yeah. With the YouTube live stream.
Right.
Oh,
take your time.
So how's life?
You want to call back later after you've thought about what you're going to say, just as opposed to find out if we're screening or what?
Don't listen to Sam. Just take your time, dude. Don't talk.
No, I'm sorry. I got a little confused. I was listening to y'all live, so I thought I was up to date. And I thought it was like a screener.
Hey, just
my
out
bad,
of curiosity, why was there a delay for you?
I'm watching on YouTube.
All right. What's up?
Other than what's going on right now, I just started listening to y'all's show about 3 days ago. And, you know, I pretty much like it. Y'all are kind of progressive, right?
Yeah. Kind of. Yeah.
Sam's kind of Jewish.
Yeah. I mean, I would assume how y'all, like, destroy, you know, most libertarians. I've seen conversations kind of funny.
Oh, yeah.
But
that's low hanging fruit.
You are definitely
Yeah. But unfortunately for me, I'm just started realizing how important politics really is to your everyday life.
Yeah.
And as I've gotten into it, you know, starting with, you know, certain, you know, people, I started with religion, grew up very fundamentalist, got out of it, became a deist, went to, you know, atheism not too long ago. And then, you know, politics seems to follow for most people. And I've kind of realized, you know, I can't justify, you know, my dad's Republican. Everyone I know is Republican. And that seems to kind of go hand in hand with that. But I, like I was saying, I just, you know, found y'all's show and I was trying to figure out, like, obviously y'all are progressive. I can agree with that. What are, and y'all seem to talk pretty well about social Democrats or democratic socialists, you know, whatever you want to throw the label right on it. I was just wondering if that's something y'all do take as a positive or is that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we did.
I didn't really, I wasn't clear on where y'all stood on
yeah
that kind
well
of.
Well, I mean, I can tell
everybody
you,
everybody wants Medicare
this,
for all.
Yeah, on this program. Well, I mean, you know, that's Medicare for all is yeah. And I think the opinions, we have a wide range of opinions on this program, ranging from increasing, you know, government ownership of various elements of the means of production. Through basically,
we go from the guillotine to Sweden. That's basically the range.
Not government. Yeah.
I think, you know, FDR Democrats,
as the people should
right
should want to come together and agree upon something like that.
Some of us
not
look
that
at
it's
Mao.
The government doing, but you know, we have elected, obviously, right?
Well, I mean, I think you know, Jamie, who's not here, I wouldn't want to speak for her, but I think she is not the statist that I am. I'm a little bit more of a statist, and Michael may be somewhere in between there. And I think we want a little bit more, you know, on the spectrum of wanting democratic control of the means of production to, you know, across the spectrum of that. But yes, we are, yeah. You know,
then, it's an internal left debate.
Yes. But listen,
yeah, and,
here's what I would
like
suggest.
Something I definitely want to get behind, but is there any kind of resources y'all can, like, I've heard.
Yes, I'll tell
you
what the resource
is. You know, a couple of, you know, pizza slices from people saying, like,
listen,
oh, it will
I'm
be cheaper.
Tell you,
are there any resources you can point
yes
me to, like actual, like, say,
yes
economists, like,
yeah
doing
yeah
the actually
listen
crunching the numbers?
Hold on.
Stephanie Kelton.
Because I don't
hold
like
on
to just.
No, not Stephanie Kelton.
Yeah, Stephanie Kelton.
Hold on.
No,
dude,
wrong.
Dude, listen to me.
Though.
Listen to me. Sorry. Just keep watching the show, and you will hear from all those people.
There's
all
a
right
show called The Michael Brooks Show.
All right, but we got to go. But I appreciate the call. But honestly,
oh,
just
no
keep watching the show.
Oh, thank you, man.
Oh, read a David Harvey book, I guess.
Yeah, but I mean,
those. Yeah, but you know, you're right. Keep watching Majority
keep
Report.
Keep watching the
you'll
show.
You'll get introduced to all these
you'll
people.
You'll get introduced to all these
you'll
people.
You'll watch Stephanie Kelton.
Go back.
You'll watch David Harvey. You'll listen to all of us argue
yes
all this stuff.
Richard Wolff, we've had on. We've had Mark Blythe. I mean, go back, Google Economist Majority Report, and you will and just
we have every
watch
type of there, besides neoclassical. We have we all of the left positions in economics are super well represented on this show.
I think so.
No, it's definitely
that
true.
Be your tagline: we represent all of the left except for neoclassical.
Yeah, we represent
well
all that does not suck.
The Majority
spectrum
Report. Right?
Oh,
I mean, there
that
it is.
Oh,
we've already done
genius
that.
Yeah.
There we go.
We
so we've already covered all that.
Just read a great tweet. Just want to
put
this out there. Shane Goldmacher from the New York Times. The 1990s Clinton wars will never end. Comstock loses. Shalala wins.
Wow.
Well, I don't know.
That's
somebody,
about right, though.
Yeah, I know. But that's somebody trying to, like, desperately.
I think it's right.
Relive. Yeah, I guess
what
so.
What was Comstock's
role? I mean,
role?
Who convinced Shalala? It's not like Shalala. It was like, oh, my God. Donna Shalala needs to represent this district.
Abrams is
17% in the
17%.
Yeah. Close.
Wow. Florida is super, super
close.
Oh,
my
close
God.
Come
if you
on
are
it
in Florida and you have not voted, go
yeah
and grab
there
everybody
go
right
it
now.
And if you're a Republican, make
let's
sure
let's hear
to show
what
they redrew the district lines in the middle of the year
yes
in Pennsylvania. And what that did was it created, first of
all right, pause. You know, we don't need to hear him. We know this story already. In fact, Mike from PA was covering it on day one. We saw the redistricting that happened. He anticipated when that happened, yep, and I guess this was about 6-7 months ago, that Pennsylvania,
at least, might
that
even a little
they would pick up a 3-6. He thought the outside was 6-7 even, I think, House seats in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
We will see. I think we're still a whiles off.
Come on, Florida, please.
I wish they had a little incumbent line because I don't know every single
42% in Indiana. Donnelly down still by 15 points, 18 points, actually. So that does not bode well. Nope. We shall see. If Donnelly loses, what needs to happen is the Democrats need to win everywhere else, assuming they're going to lose in North Dakota. Mm-hmm. They need to win, hold every other seat. McCaskill, Manchin, and then they need to win in Arizona. They need to win in Nevada. They need to win in Texas, and they need to win in Tennessee. So tough to imagine.
That's another
but
hard one. Right
I still
there.
Think that the most likely scenario, I still think it depends on Donnelly, is a 50-50 tie in the Senate. And people have not talked about that very much, I think, like I said, because it would effectively be no different than it is now. But I think from a political standpoint, it would be nice to bring Mike Pence into this a little bit more and make him start to take a little bit of ownership.
Yep.
We're going to have somebody on. Is it Monday, Brendan?
That's the 19th.
So in a couple of weeks, who has written the book, essentially, on Mike Pence. And I knew a little bit about Pence.
Already?
Well, no, this guy did a biography on him. And I knew a little bit about Mike Pence just because back in the day when he was in the House, I think was Air America time, and I had done one or two interviews about stuff that he had done in the state with some lawyers. This guy said he is, in the history of the United States, the most powerful theocrat that has ever been in the United States. That he has his the level of theocracy that he holds ideologically and his power as vice president of the United States, that cross-section has never been rivaled.
But he's Catholic. Not that that's an excuse, but I find it fascinating. Isn't he Catholic?
I do not think he's Catholic. I think he's
am I making this up? I thought he was Catholic.
He was born Catholic, raised Catholic, and then converted to evangelical.
I think he's an evangelical.
The converts are always the hardest, too. Cordray, I mean, it's again, super early, only 30% in. But, you know, to win Ohio, to win Wisconsin, to win Pennsylvania, to win Michigan— the governor seats there are hugely important, both for the quality of life for people who live there and in terms of the future of the Democratic Party and Democrats getting power over the next, two or three cycles.
And one thing just to keep in mind, it's not just that we need those seats and people need to have rights in their own state. If you have a Democratic governor of Ohio, that means suddenly there are resources in the Democratic Party in Ohio, and that flows down to other ballots, other races, down ballot. And also, for presidential elections, it makes that infrastructure stronger.
Yep.
One of the reasons why I used to live in Arizona, one of the reasons why, even though I think Arizona is a blue state and has been for over a decade, one of the reasons why I think it doesn't stay that way is that Democrats go in, pull out, Janet Napolitano, I mean, the fact that she was appointed governor, that was a stupid, stupid decision by President Obama, because Arizona could have stayed Democratic.
Yep.
And really had an infrastructure there.
You know, just talk about that a little bit, because I don't think people appreciate that. I don't know that I appreciated that until fairly late in doing this, that it is, I mean, it in some respects, it's so... it's so basic that people overlook this, but when you are in a position of power, that comes with money. It comes with a budget. Yep. And all of a sudden, then you're hiring, you know, other progressives and everybody, it all sort of starts to flow a little bit. I mean, it's not just a question of patronage. It's a question of building and supporting a structure. I mean, my understanding is that Elizabeth Warren was interested in being Clinton's vice president because she wanted the resources that would have come with that office to build essentially an apparatus that would deal with questions, particularly I think she was interested in antitrust and whatnot, across the government. And, I think a lot of people just think, like, does she want to be associated with her and ideological and this and that? Mm-hmm. And really it's no, it's just I want that pot of resources to build out and pursue the agenda that I'm looking to pursue.
And I think that's why, at the end of the day, it's more important that you have... Oh, I can't even believe I'm saying this, and I'm such a critic of Joe Manchin. Joe Manchin barely votes Democratic. It's not like he votes with Republicans, you know, on those crucial votes. That's horrifying. But when you have a majority, you have more resources.
Right.
So in Chuck Schumer's mind, rather, you know, my opinion would be find somebody better than Joe Manchin who is more of a populist, because he's not a populist. He's a capitalist. He's an extreme capitalist who pretends to be a populist.
Corporatist,
exactly. But to find somebody who is better across the board, that would be my perspective. But I understand the concept of keeping him in office now in the general election, because if we have the majority, we have the resources, we can start investing across the country.
Right. Well, I mean, what else could Chuck Schumer squander if he didn't have these resources?
Exactly. Well, you know.
I know. I'm not.
Don't
put
anything
position.
Past his imaginary friends, dude.
Now I'm going to put anybody.
Be careful.
In a,
do you know about Chuck Schumer's imaginary friends?
No,
know
I just
this?
Figured that was something that
the Bailey.
No, those is a literal thing. So he said several years ago in a profile that he runs all of his main policy decisions by a family from Massapequa called the Baileys. And the thing about them is that they're Massapequa.
I was just there yesterday.
Don't hate on Massapequa.
This is great. I know.
Did you meet the Baileys?
Did you meet wouldn't, because they're figments of his fucking imagination, literally. And he actually publicly is like, I love how even his imagination's boring. But he literally is like,
right, exactly.
I talked to
what's
a
the most obvious number?
The Baileys. What? Oh,
it's a swing district.
Yeah.
Suffolk, Nassau.
Yeah.
You know,
what should we do about Puerto Rico? I'm going to have to ask the Baileys first. You want to know what more I could squander? You never know till I talk to my fake friends, Nomiki.
All right, let's look at this here.
No, you're not doing it right.
It's like, all right, DeSantis is now ahead half.
Look in the camera, please. Look, she's got it. That's scary.
I thought I had the Twitter address.
That's good.
Chuck Schumer's glasses, but I don't.
So good.
He's finding it in the same neck and neck in Florida.
Oh, come on, Florida.
24% in. Okay, what's putting up on the board right now?
Osceola
County, 59-39. That's actually less.
The margin of Clinton was 25.
Still some. Who's Johnson and why is he running? Point margin.
No, that was in the that was
right. 25 yeah,
running about even in where Orlando right. is. So Orange you're County, seeing and it looks like same day vote in some of those places. Trump did really well, and in 2016 looks like
now.
Republicans are getting that today in Florida as well, and you got a very complicated picture there statewide.
So what are we waiting
right
on?
Now we're going to try to page Chuck Todd and get him back in
90%
there's apparently some panhandles to come in exactly. So
oh,
that's
shit.
Not helpful.
Oh, fuck.
But it's smaller population.
Michael Steele is with us, the former chairman of the Republican
that's
Party.
Just,
and Michael,
that's my favorite Republican
your
right there.
Job tonight, how would you feel about the chances?
I'd be very nervous, to be honest, because there's a lot that's still out there, obviously. But when you look at the trend lines, particularly in a state like Virginia, Northern Virginia, that Loudoun County area has become so much of a bellwether for the state and almost for the region. As the demographic patterns have shifted and changed, and the parties at the state and the national level have to be cognizant of how people are not just moving around, but how that's impacting the vote patterns and where people are going to turn out and how that vote settles down. And I think we're going to see this play out across the country tonight.
All right, we don't need
way,
to hear. Let's take a phone call here. Call from
Michael
a 561 area code.
Scott Nelson.
Call from a 561 area code. Who's this?
Florida is so crazy.
What the fuck?
561? 561? Going once? Going twice? Let's go to... call from an 832 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Jesus.
Hello? This is Raquel.
Raquel, where are you calling from?
From Texas.
What's going on in Texas, Raquel?
From Houston.
What's happening in Houston?
So we had several polling places with either too few machines or they didn't open on time.
Mm.
So there some advocates sued the city. They're staying open till 8. It's 7:17 now.
Wow. All right. So
but I had a friend work the polls today by my house in my precinct, and he said lots of minorities, so... I'm hoping Beto can pull it off.
All right. Well, I guess we'll see. We haven't seen any numbers out of Texas yet, but appreciate the call. Thank you, Raquel.
No problem.
Calling from an 802 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
All right. So you
got to turn your computer down. 802. 802.
And he said, listen to
me. We'll come back to you. Calling from 478 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Sam, this is Jeff in Georgia. Good evening to you.
Jeff, what's happening in Georgia? It doesn't look great at the moment. Do you have a sense of what's extant?
It does not look great, although I would not say it's totally hopeless. We still have a lot of dim stronghold counties that I know particularly have not reported yet. So the spread is wide, but there's only a handful of percent reported yet in Georgia. So I ain't too worried about it. I still got a lot of hope for Stacey Abrams, who would certainly make a damn fine governor. And if she doesn't win, I'll have plenty to say about why I think that happened. But I don't want to dwell on that too hard right now. I don't want to get people down. If by chance anybody can hear the sound of my voice and is in line, please stay in line. Once you're in line, Georgia, you must be allowed to vote. That is the policy, as long as you're in line before 7. I did want to talk a little bit about my ballot, if you'll allow me, Sam.
Yeah, I
do. You know, this is something I noticed. This is something I noticed in 2016 as well. You know, years like this, where you know, Democratic turnout, even if it's not enough to quite tip the ship over, as it were, you know, it's going to be much larger than anyone could have expected. Say, I don't know, 2 to 4 to 6 years ago, right? And that's really the time that you would want to begin recruiting candidates for office. And on several lines on my ballot, there's not even a name for me to vote for. I'm not talking about campaign infrastructure or investments in media buys or anything like that. I'm just talking about a name. Someone that you know, in times where there is a wave election and it takes people by surprise, you know, the few of those races would get picked up. I do think if there was just a name there, right? Like, not too many, but you know what? Like, every little bit counts, I think. Like, you know, we're going to need to play every possible angle we possibly can.
Hillary won districts
on the side
in Texas
in order to get power back.
Hillary won districts in Texas that didn't have a Democrat on the ballot in 2016.
That didn't have anybody else on.
Yeah,
there.
No, I mean,
it happens, but it helps.
How hard
it
can
helps.
It possibly be?
Right. But it helps to have it helps to have other people on the ballot. But I know what you're saying. We're going to need all stops. But let's I guess we're just going to wait and see what happens here. But point taken.
Hang in there, Majority Report. I'll be listening hard.
All right, thanks, Jeff.
I'd like to apologize because I thought you guys muted me whole entire call, and then I'm just chit-chatting away.
I muted you.
No worries.
My earphones I was muted.
Matt got you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Let's Super get a report from Black. Wisconsin. On the phone, we have producer emeritus of the Majority Report, Josh Orton. Josh, welcome to the program.
Executive producer emeritus.
Executive producer emeritus. I apologize.
I think he stripped that title after you left, Josh.
Well, emeritus is specific.
No, executive producer.
Oh, you got demoted and then made emeritus is what happened after the fact.
That took a big hit in the Majority Report pension.
Yes, big hit, super big hit. All right, so Josh, for folks who don't know, you worked on Russ Feingold's campaign. You worked in the past for Harry Reid, amongst others. Give us a sense of what's going on in Wisconsin. Scott Walker.
Yeah, well, so folks are already looking at the turnout in Wisconsin in a national context, it's huge, and people are predicting that Wisconsin may actually get the highest voter turnout of any state. It's going to crest the 2016 turnout in Dane County, which is obviously where Madison is, and a huge, dense area for Democratic votes. And I think that for Scott Walker, look, he he's running for his third term, and he struggled in the polls for a couple reasons. One is he doesn't have a liberal boogeyman to go after like he did when he was bashing the unions. And he lost a lot of popularity after he ran for president. And I think that it's, if there's such a high turnout of Democratic voters in Dane and Milwaukee counties, you know, he's got to look at Waukesha County and a couple of the other counties around Waukesha to really pack in numbers. He needs to exceed 70% of the vote in Waukesha, I think, in order to hold on. Because Republicans might have a drop-off problem. They needed a reason to turn out. They're not all that excited about Walker. And plus, Tammy Baldwin is not a rallying figure for the GOP. Her approval is above water. So
right.
I feel really good about Tammy. And I'm cautiously optimistic about Tony Evers beating Scott Walker.
All right. And are there any congressional races that are in play there?
Bryce.
Well, obviously, the big one is Stash. Randy Bryce.
Right.
Right. To replace Paul Ryan in the first congressional district. And, you know, because there's not a lot of district level polling, that's one a little harder to forecast. But I think that Randy ran an incredibly strong field program. And, you know, that would be, if Randy wins, it's going to be a very, very good night.
Can I give a shout out to someone on that race?
Sure.
Shout out to campaign manager David Keith in that office. He's been kicking butt. Old friend of mine. Talked to him last night and he said he felt good. So that doesn't come from campaign managers' mouths very often.
You know, one of the things that I heard that people were talking about is that the Rust Belt, you know, places like Wisconsin, Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, in some ways in this race, the states that essentially gave the presidency to Donald Trump are sort of returning in some ways. The South may be still a reach, but these are places which the Rust Belt could very well end up coming
well,
back.
Well, here you go. That's kind of a pickup, right? In Illinois. I mean, Pritzker.
Oh, no,
and Pritzker's terrible, but he beat...
Larry Hogan just won, though. I think people knew.
But that's not surprising.
And Gina Raimondo won in Rhode Island. Oh, she's sort of horrible.
Awful. She's trash.
But what do you think about that, Josh? The Rust Belt.
Well, it was interesting that you bring that up because if you look in the southwest corner of Wisconsin, about six or seven counties, traditionally Democratic in presidential years. Hogan won.
That's
they were actually Trump-Feingold counties in 2016. And as soon as just the next spring, when there was a statewide Supreme Court race, which is in theory nonpartisan, those counties returned back to sort of the Democratic default. So I think if you see those are going to return back, I think, to the Democratic column. Rock County, where Janesville is, and even some of the northern counties up by Green Bay, I think are going to start returning back to the sort of the Democratic trend. And if so, I think that says a lot about, what happened in 2016. And I think it's very optimistic for 2018 and 2020. And it was interesting to see, obviously, the exit polls and nationally had healthcare as the most important issue by 20 points. That was true by 25 points in the exits in Wisconsin.
Tom Wolf was just projected winner in Pennsylvania. So
that's a crucial one.
So you now have Illinois and Pennsylvania. Obviously, Pennsylvania is still Democratic, stays Democratic. Illinois is a flip. I guess, is now
and Pritzker
up to,
is great, particularly on racial issues. You know, he's a very enlightened guy.
It's not looking great for Donnelly.
No, it is not looking good for Donnelly.
Early demographics are not great for Donnelly.
And that is, that's worrying. I mean, the polls had Donnelly pretty tight, right? I mean, within the margin of error. And Donnelly looks like he's losing outside. I mean, it's significant. I haven't seen the latest numbers. Cordray is up with 31% in.
Looks like Donnelly's 39 to 56.
Yeah, that is.
That's a blowout.
I mean, Jesus. If those numbers hold, then the polls overestimated Democratic support there by about 10 points. And that's disturbing in terms of its implications, yeah. You know, in other places around the country. I mean, it's hard to say, like, what. So, you know, this feels like, you know, people are going to be doing studies over what were the actual slices of the electorate that they got wrong. Mm-hmm. Because.
Well, one reason for optimism in Indiana is it looks like Marion County, where Indianapolis is only maybe a fifth or just over a fifth in.
All right. Well, so fair enough. Let's. We will hold on to that.
Losing by like 7 points.
Pour another a glass of gin, and then work my way.
This is looking. I mean, hopefully, this is a similar dynamic in Georgia, where the wrong counties come in.
64% they're in, and Stacey Abrams still down by 60,000. That's quite a bit.
It's a lot of voters.
They would have called it if
they say Broward has some votes left to come in. About over half are in, but
Broward County. I remember being a teenager, and that was the first time that Broward County mattered a lot for our lives. Yeah. That's disturbing.
All roads lead to Broward County.
Yeah, I don't want to deal with Broward County, dude. I just want Andrew Gillum to win this race if there's any basic like chance of human survival.
Well, Josh, so I guess basically the long and short of it is we got to pay attention to Waukesha County. And if Walker is on pace to win over 70%, he's in better shape. If he's under 70%,
be careful,
he's
Josh.
In trouble.
Don't get hurt out there.
Yeah, I think that's right, and especially to compensate for the just a raw number of the just record breaking number of votes out of Dane County where Madison is. So we'll see.
Interesting. How much do you think, Josh, does voter suppression, you know, account for what's going on in Wisconsin these days?
I mean, there are a couple studies, and you know, the more conservative estimates are at least in the low tens of thousands. There were, I think, about 300,000 people in Wisconsin who were legally and properly registered to vote, but who lacked the ID to vote. Hmm. And so, you know, the question is how much of that 300,000 were attempted voters or likely voters. But it is significant, and in the last days of the campaign, it was like Friday, Scott Walker announced that he was activating the National Guard for cybersecurity reasons.
Right.
What? I've never heard of that, and it seemed like an obvious throw every suppression tactic at the wall to maybe have people imagine National Guards have been standing at the polls and perhaps intimidate voters away. But it's a huge thing, and this is one of those states where the maps are so rigged. And you know, the other thing to watch in Wisconsin is Dems need 3 state senate seats to get the majority of the state senate, which is a huge deal considering the redistricting case basically got punted at the Supreme Court.
Right.
Isn't it that Wisconsin's the most segregated state in the union?
Well, Milwaukee is certainly one of the most segregated cities in the country.
Yeah,
I don't have the stat for the state overall, but yeah, it is. It's the Milwaukee has been notoriously segregated, and in not just geographically, but in public resources and you know, the counties around Milwaukee have nixed transportation funds so that people in the north side of Milwaukee can go to surrounding communities to get jobs.
Menendez really held on to his seat. Sorry to interrupt. Bob Menendez. No, I didn't think this would be. I mean,
they must have exit polling because they've just called it with 1% in and he's losing by 500.
Yeah, that's
votes.
Weird. But I mean,
Bob Menendez, not too corrupt for New Jersey.
Right.
Well, no, he's not. It's New Jersey.
No one's too corrupt
for
New Jersey.
Who's too corrupt for New Jersey?
Well, that was his friend, right, guys. Yes. Come on.
Oh, that's all that's all he did?
Pre-existing relationship.
I totally dig this attitude for public advocate.
I mean, it's New York.
He was just on a plane. What's the problem? I'm the public advocate. They're friends.
I am sex positive and friendship positive.
I want to go to the Dominican Republic. That's your business.
It's interesting. So
check our database.
Rick Scott, so Bill Nelson is running about even with Andrew Gillum. No one really expected that.
Right. I mean, there may be some of that Wilder effect, or my understanding is that a lot of that talk of like the idea that people lie in this day and age to pollsters about voting for a black guy was more apocryphal, but it sort of feels like maybe that's what happened there. I mean, you know, it's a little bit early to tell, but the, you know, Gillum was up by 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 points in some of these things, and it felt like he was pulling Bill Nelson across the finish line, and it sort of feels like Bill Nelson is outperforming him right now.
Never trust the white man, polls or otherwise.
He's still there, Josh?
Yeah. Yeah, it's and I think that Nelson got a little bit more profile. You know, he really I think he connected with some communities after the Parkland shooting and sort of stepped up in his role. So, you know, I think that he may have introduced himself to voters that really didn't have any contact with him before, but he certainly didn't have the movement of Gillum. And so it's, you know, we'll see how it shakes out, but this is, you know, people generally expected him to run, you know, 3-4 points or so ahead of Nelson.
Governor Pritzker.
All right. Well, Josh Orton, thanks so much for your time today, bud. Anything we're missing or what?
Well, I'll be with you when we're having the recount show tomorrow.
Right.
And in the coming weeks when we're down in Broward
County.
DeSantis
is up now about a point, 0.2. He's up about
DeSantis?
Yeah, about 85,000 votes with 9% still to come in.
So one thing, just a side note, thinking about how this affects down ballot, when you have states like Florida and these swing states and these swing districts, I mean, this happened in Long Island, you know, King, Representative King is being challenged by Luba Gretchen Shirley. And in the last few months, the Republicans have poured in an unbelievable amount of money into Long Island, speaking of Massapequa. And as a result, you have a state senator who's a Democrat. You have an assemblywoman who flipped that seat 40 points within Trump's election and won as a Democrat. But now they're in very serious, you know, there's a very serious chance that both of them might lose. And part of it is because King was challenged and the Republican Congressional Committee poured all this money in. So I'm wondering how that plays a role in places like Florida. Like, could we actually be winning the legislatures by not winning the governorships? Meaning if we just didn't put the money into the governorships when they're that tight. I mean, there's no way of predicting this, but
right.
The Republicans just have so much more money that it's affecting down ballot. So, and that's where they win, is the legislatures.
As you're basically saying, lay low in certain areas and be, I mean.
Maybe. I don't know.
Josh, what's your sense of that?
I also think that sometimes, if Mickey, if you're just talking about money, I think it's not necessarily a zero-sum game, right?
That's true.
Because a candidate like Andrew Gillum actually, you know, makes the playing field bigger. Right. It's not just sort of a set pot of national money that gets distributed.
Sure.
It's not just a certain amount of grassroots fundraising that gets solicited by email lists. Right. It, you know, a candidate like Gillum can actually bring in, who speaks to people and can actually energize folks, can bring in money that obviously would never have come into that race to begin with. So I think when it comes to money, I don't think that's necessarily a zero sum. I do think that sometimes it's difficult when people get sort of electrified by some of these statewide races, that it's definitely hard to, especially if there's not necessarily a great coordinated campaign in the state, it's hard to sort of have that trickle down to the local or state legislative elections for sure.
And they don't have the volunteers and they don't have the budgets. So I saw it. I was in Long Island this weekend and, you know, the John Brooks campaign and the Pellegrino campaign were offering, you know, great rates for volunteers. Meanwhile, Luba had lines around the door in the same district. And even if they're coordinated, it's still complicated. Yeah. It's a very complicated situation, and that's why it's important to have strong Democratic parties, which we don't have in New York State.
For sure, for sure. The shape of the state Democratic parties are atrocious. And there's just the obvious thing that it's sometimes, given that the state Democratic parties are atrocious, there's not a great Democratic Party bench, and it's much harder to recruit great candidates or electrifying candidates or progressive candidates in those state legislative districts.
That's right.
Josh, thanks for your time tonight, bud. Talk to you later.
See you in Southern Florida.
Yeah, I guess so. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And, I don't think he's talking specifically, but it's conceivable there is a recount. We'll see where that last 9% goes. But, yeah. It's going to be another one of those nights, folks. I was sort of, hoping for just a blowout where we could just sit back and drink and not have anxiety until 11:30 at night. But I have a feeling there may be some of that. The number now is at 21. I think I missed the next pickup. We picked up Virginia, obviously.
Remember those days when elections ended?
Right. Josh Hawley is the candidate running against Claire McCaskill, whose own child has a pre-existing condition. And he read an ad lying about his position on pre-existing conditions using his own kid. So I just wanted to just register that one.
Nice guy.
There was a time when Republicans would be like, all right, I have a gay kid, I'll stop being an asshole. And this guy was like, what if instead of my kid having a problem increasing my empathy, I could harness my kid for an ad?
Right, exactly. Yeah, sure. hold on. I think we may have another guest online. I'm trying to look. We have 28 callers on hold at the moment. Let's see.
So what is how many seats have been picked up so far?
We have picked up two House seats. I believe there's 21 to go. I'm trying to
Virginia, Florida, 21 left, yeah.
Okay.
There was a pickup in Florida, is that as well?
Yeah, flip in Florida 27 and Virginia 10.
Florida was Shalala. How could you?
Shalala, Donna Shalala.
There you go.
Miki's favorite candidate. Miki likes Shalala a lot.
Calling from a 503 kind of area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from? 503. 503.
Take your time. Don't
this
get to
is me. Dracula calling from Transylvania.
I'm hanging up because that is not a funny.
That is also
good of a pie.
Problematic in terms of there. As far as I know, there is no congressional races in Transylvania. Not of interest of us tonight. Calling from a 217 area code.
Following my lead, getting a little tougher with these callers.
Well, that was low hanging fruit.
That was low hanging fruit.
Call from a 217 area code.
Hey, this is Cole in Illinois.
Cole, Pritzker is now your governor. Congrats?
Ish, sort of, I guess.
Yeah, feels great, I guess. anyway, I was calling to ask you where the Jimmy Dore theory plays in tonight.
Where the Jimmy Dore theory plays in tonight?
Which theory is that?
Yeah,
you're a fucking sellout.
Theory, we're supposed to get the House and the Senate back, right?
You're
right. Well,
you're a fucking sellout.
I see what you're saying. Yes, I feel like that theory has gotten pretty threadbare. I think what the caller is referring to is that the idea was that that Donald Trump would destroy the Republican Party, and by 2018, I think he said that the Democrats would take the Senate and the House, and
then there'd be a filibuster.
And
can I present Jimmy Dore's ideas as Bill Clinton, please?
Look, I think
then there would be a mass outpouring in the streets.
I think
then
it
Bernie
is.
Bernie Sanders be elected president in 2019 because they amend the Constitution.
Very good.
So just let Trump win, and then there'll be a fucking revolution. But you're motivated by fear.
I hear your point. I mean, well, what's even worse than that, though, is that, like, Okay, so yes, a Democrat won in Illinois. That's good. That's better than if you had a Republican. But it's Pritzker. Like the revolution.
Pritzker is a progressive.
Just doesn't seem.
It's not as good as Tulsi Gabbard, but he's pretty fucking amazing.
I mean, my biggest problem with that theory, if it worked, was like all we're going to do is get back to baseline.
Yep.
And then we're going to try and build from there. I mean, that's the problem with that theory.
I have a
when
question.
It works.
Why do you love Chuck Schumer so much? It's my question.
Cole, I appreciate the call.
Maybe if you're more motivated by fucking fear,
thanks,
we could have change.
Call him from
Samantha.
Call him from a 307 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hey, this is Josh from Wyoming.
Josh, what's happening in Wyoming?
Well, I imagine it's going to be a full right-wing sweep.
Yeah. Well, it's Wyoming.
And,
what are you doing there?
Yeah. And then watching the results with great stress.
Yeah. The stress is warranted, I think. And, you know, but with that said, your stress, my stress will not do anything.
Wyoming's on the verge of the Green Party taking over.
95%
just
in.
Just hanging there. A couple
Gillum
more
is down by 1.2%
oh
with 95%
God,
in.
God, you're killing
oh,
me.
Oh, fuck you, you racist garbage. Who
I'm just,
could look
I'm
at
telling
Florida?
You watching on the,
not
what
you.
When
I
all the retirees
obvious.
Pass
no, but who,
on?
Who, what yeah. human being could look at those two people on stage and say, I'm going to pick the small, defensive, oily guy with connections to every type of repugnant individual imaginable who looks like a pedophilia poster over the nice mayor from Tallahassee. Like that is that this is how deep the racism
you know,
has to be, huh?
Now,
because that is a pure racism
49%
vote.
In.
That's a
Beto
pure racism
is up by
vote.
52% to 48%. I mean, you know.
That's a perfect example.
That'd be nice. I take that.
This is another one. If you would go in a room and say, I would spend six years with Ted Cruz over Beto O'Rourke, then you should be institutionalized.
I mean, listen, we're talking about, you know, Texas isn't sort of like the pure South. Neither is Florida, for that matter.
No.
But there is a slight difference between Beto O'Rourke and Andrew Gillum.
Yes.
I'll give
that was kind of my point, right? Wasn't that sort of my point?
Let's see if you can. Yeah, I mean, look.
Right.
You know, one of the things that...
One of them isn't a fucking criminal sellout.
Last week, I was on a Hayes' program, and there was this notion of wanting to be very positive. And I said, you know, and we've said this on this program, that it's quite possible that this election will show us something very, very dark about our country. I mean, it's one thing about, you know, like sort of... you know, people didn't like Hillary Clinton for a myriad of reasons, and there was a lot of baggage, and there was a lot of other but-fors, and, you know, Comey, and mistakes by the campaign, and this and that. But, you know, we're now at, like, we're more or less I want to say gut check time, but I basically want to say, like, things are pretty obvious now. Right. Like there's no to the extent that the American public can be anything can be communicated to the American public. Things are pretty clear. But we'll see.
Well, the Howquist race is a great example. You know, Vermont is not the South.
Right.
And
right.
she's getting
right.
slaughtered right.
right
now.
Right. 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 I mean, we have a long way to go.
Yep.
Josh, I appreciate the call. Hang in there. Maybe we'll all come skiing.
It's your best friend, Chris fucking Sellout Hayes.
Hold on for 1 second.
I'm going to be doing this impression the rest of the night. It's the only way I'm going to get through this.
Could you do a robocall for me?
Absolutely.
I endorse.
I got you.
I don't endorse.
I keep getting the wrong number.
Because she believes.
David Pacman is on hold.
David Pacman.
But he keeps telling me the wrong number that he's calling from, and I can't find him.
No, Mickey has a future-oriented vision for New York City and the Democratic Party. She wants to work across aisles with corrupt consultants that represent the Bronx as well as Queens.
I'm trying to find it now. He's telling me it's a weird-looking number from Skype. I literally have
thanks, David.
38 people on
that's
the
very
call.
Helpful, David. Thank you.
You need to
It's this Transylvania. That was
David,
him.
What I need you to do is call yourself. Tell me what the ID is.
That was David from Transylvania.
All right. Like vamp that. For a second. I'm going to get a pizza and a... let's listen to Hayes.
Beto would need in order to defeat the incumbent Ted Cruz.
Oh, I'm sorry. Brian, you go ahead.
No, please.
I'm sorry to interject. I was just going to ask kind of a dumb question, which is, Chris, I know that you've been through a lot of races like this. You've been through losing and winning races. You've been at headquarters as the votes have come in. Just from your own reporting and your own sense, do you think that the Beto O'Rourke campaign believes that it will win tonight, or do they believe that they will lose tonight?
They believe they will win. Now, that's a crazy belief in some ways because of the history of statewide Democrats in Texas.
I mean, if you look I guess the only thing that's interesting so far tonight really is it seems like Beto O'Rourke actually has a real shot at winning this race. And I have always said, amidst all of these debates about zero sum or not zero sum, making the economic case, dealing with racism and misogyny and all the rest, that some of these things also come down to just like whether or not somebody is charismatic or not, or whether or not somebody is really exceptionally weird and bizarre and sort of almost non-sentient. And I was hoping that that principle would apply in the Gillum DeSantis race, though it seems like the racism of Trump voters in Florida is overcoming that. But it looks like in Texas, it's not over yet. And if you're there, please stay in line. I don't even think the polls have closed yet.
I think they have.
Oh, they have. Yeah. Okay, so it's not over yet. I don't want to be too pessimistic about Georgia and Florida. But it looks like in Texas that some of the principle of just one person being a somewhat sort of nice approximation of a decent, normal person that you might want to interact with versus the other person being arguably, I would say, I mean, Ted Cruz basically is the most repulsive person in American life. I don't really think that that's a debate. It looks like maybe that's working. I mean, you know, besides this, I wonder in general if we just have to get used to the idea that there aren't going to be waves one way or another anymore. In some respects, even 2016 was a wave for Republicans because they suppress votes and they win presidencies without getting the popular vote. We have a divided electorate.
I need a few more examples to make sure that Republicans can't win a wave.
Right. No, I mean, yeah, that's a fair point. But I just think it just seems to me, though, that like essentially, I mean, the electorate is really divided, and that might be a cliche, but it's obviously the case, and there's not that much work you can do on these margins.
I'm looking at Florida, some different. It looks like, you know, there's a few of the red panhandle things, although a few of them are completely reported now. But I'm looking at Palm Beach, 507, which Gillum is winning.
That could be good.
Gillum's winning it by 90,000 votes, and it's 572 of 871 good. Precincts left out. Broward County, Gillum is winning that by almost 200,000 votes, 152 to 347, and that has like 295 to 577.
So it also shows
some big counties.
They're big counties, and also that still, if they look, the Republicans. That's why voting suppression is their number one priority, and because the electorate. And I'm not a demographic determinist, but I'm also a demographic determinist. At a certain point, a party that's built purely on aging white supremacy is not going to succeed in a multiracial America unless they literally ethnically cleanse and engineer the electorate, which is their political project right now. Why there's no difference between Donald Trump and Justice Roberts, frankly.
Right. Interesting. Nomi, you got
to
go.
Speaking of white supremacy, I have to go head to Brooklyn. We're in Brooklyn, but I have to go back to Bay Ridge because Andrew Gonardis is a Democrat running against Marty Golden, who's a Republican state senator, whose chief of staff organized the Proud Boys event, speaking of white supremacy.
Oh, that guy.
That guy. So Andrew's a dear friend. He could possibly flip the state senate in New York, which is supposed to be blue, and it's not, and it's holding up like literally everything. Like New York is...
It's holding up stuff for the nation.
For the
because
nation,
as New York goes, I mean, they could be a template for the nation. All right, well, Nomi, if people wanted more information about your race for public advocate, where would
they
go?
Can I solicit donations here?
sure.
No, this is really a grassroots effort. So
we do that all the time.
Okay, fantastic. Wonderful. It is nomikikonst.com. That's N-O-M-I-K-I. KONST.com. We are in a fight because we have 3 months. I know we're paying attention to tonight, but our election's in about 3 months. So
special election.
Special election. All the donations you can get if you live in New York and you want to be a volunteer, you want to help out, go to the website. We have a volunteer button. Go to my Twitter. Message me. Everything. Every dollar, every person counts because it's a low turnout special election in the middle of winter.
All right. Well, we will put a link to that on the podcast and in our YouTube page. Nomi, thanks so much for taking the time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Let's do this. Let's win it. Going to have a few good ones.
Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed. Yes. I would like to at least
let's support Democratic consulting firms who need more appreciation.
They're making the money. I know that right now.
Interesting. Thank you, Nomi. Thanks. Interesting tweet from Ezra Klein, which I think is accurate. I don't think people are ready for the crisis that will follow if Democrats win the House popular vote, but not the majority. This is what happened in 2014, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe it was 2012 as well. There were more Democratic votes cast than Republican votes nationally, but because of gerrymandering, you had significantly more Republicans who won their seats. Let's go to the phones. I think Pacman dropped because I couldn't. What am I going to do? We've got to figure this out. Colin from, let's go to the IMs. Great news in North. Democrats came out in force in Wake County, even the long-serving Republican sheriff and daughter of Jesse Helms, clerk of court, being booted. That's in North Carolina. Here we go. We got to go back down to this. 90 stand-up, Sam, how's everybody doing tonight? Have you seen the news about all the new hate groups these days? Have you heard about this? I mean, great. All right. That's good. Shy stripper. No need to vote today. Jimmy Dore informed me the Dems can just filibuster the midterms until we take the Senate. Sean voted straight blue ticket in California. Congressional baseball fan have to follow up in the prior discussion. In addition to Pee Wee Herman, Donald Trump also identifies with several other Pee Wee's Playhouses characters, including King of Cartoons and Randy the Bully Puppet. Play ball. UK socialism for the win. Hey, guys, I'm from the Channel Islands in the UK. Been watching you all night. Fingers crossed. It's looking good. Love you guys. Dump Trump. It's looking okay. We're going to see.
It's pretty inscrutable so far, I think.
Well, there's a couple of good congressional races that have gone the right way. And so we will see from there. I was brought up as a young Tory, but since researching politics, I was not going to just follow my father's politics. Now I'm a socialist. My dad hates me for it, but my mom and sisters, basically all girls I have any interest in, have the same point of view. Being a right-winger is whack, and the right will lose in the long run. I hopefully agree. A facepalm USA split times or states split within two time zones. Seb Gorka business card. Help, I'm listening to you guys on YouTube, but my dad has the TV set to Fox News. At least the Megyn Kelly lookalike hasn't said anything about blackface. Josh from Az, you guys drinking yet? Yes. Max and Mary, I live in exurban Maryland. I had to wait in line today for the first time in the last couple of elections. Majority people of color and women. John from San Antonio, Grant Link, to keep up with the Sonoma City Council race, total nail biter. Where is John? Why hasn't John called in? John, if you're out there, I was anticipating you calling by now.
Rashida Tlaib won in Michigan 13, becoming the first woman ever elected to Congress. I don't think we've mentioned that yet.
That was anticipated, though, right?
Andy Barr also won in Kentucky, fending off Amy McGrath.
That is
that's a tough one.
That is a tough one, and it is not. That does not bode so great. Joe Donnelly has lost now.
Oh, and I believe Kim Davis lost her bid for re-election to, I believe, somebody that she denied a marriage permit to.
Yeah.
So that's a nice moral victory, but Joe Donnelly has lost. The Senate would appear to be out of reach, though there is still a path, right? We can lose Heitkamp and Donnelly if Nevada goes blue, if if Arizona goes blue, Texas goes blue, and Tennessee goes blue. That is a steep climb. Right now, Rick Scott has taken the lead from Bill Nelson in Florida, and there's not much left. That would be bad as well. You know? DeSantis sucks. Voting blue in Florida to cancel out my father-in-law's vote. Voting for Gillum, Nelson, and Sean Shaw for AG. Gillum could bring Medicaid expansion. Shaw could pull Florida out of the lawsuit of pre-existing conditions.
This is the thing. Do people still think that after 2 years of control of all branches of government that Republicans are going to change healthcare in any significant way over the next 2 years? It is the most important polled issue in this election.
I'm not convinced that if the Republicans were to maintain control of the House, that they wouldn't. They missed rolling back Obamacare by one vote, and that vote is gone. So, you know, let's not forget that. Calling from an 801 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hey, Sam. This is Carson.
Carson, where are you calling from?
Salt Lake City, Utah.
Joe Manchin has just won in West Virginia. Go ahead, Carson.
Today I went to go vote for the very first time, hopefully to get rid of Mitt Romney.
Well,
you'll see how that goes.
Right. Well, I appreciate the vote anyways.
Hello. I just want to talk about how crazy Utah is with gerrymandering. I live in Salt Lake City, and the districts for voting are split up in four different districts throughout the entire state. And Salt Lake City is mostly blue. And what the Republicans have done with their control since they've controlled Utah for so long is made it to where Salt Lake City is split up into three different electoral maps and or sections. And so I'm voting basically with people that live 500 miles away from me because the Republicans have gerrymandered the district so much. It's pretty ridiculous that what they've done.
Yeah, I mean, this is the case around the country. You know, we see it in state after state. You know, Pennsylvania was horrendous, but fortunately the state Supreme Court was reversed it. So Greg Abbott wins re-election in Texas. Not a huge surprise. Wisconsin, still too early to call. Arizona Senate, still too early to call. Well, listen, Carson, I appreciate the phone call. And I think, unfortunately, Mitt Romney is going to win. But you can feel proud about your vote.
All right. You have a good night.
Okay. I'm going to go there to fight racism and fight sexism and xenophobia. Psych!
There you go.
Carson, how much do you make a year? Post-tax income.
He's joking. All right. We'll see you, Carson.
Wanted to see whether or not your opinion matters.
See you. Take care.
All right. Thanks. Bear with us, callers. We have 43 people on the line. So you got to bear with us. Calling from a 251 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hey there. This is Wesley from Alabama.
Wesley, what's on your mind?
Not much. I just want to talk about, we had a few amendments on the ballot today. I've been a long-time listener for about 2 years now. And so we had three amendments on the ballot today where one was for abortion, taking it to where the Constitution would not cover it. And another as well where
listen, you're breaking up. I'm sorry. I can't make out what you're saying right now. There's something wrong with your phone.
Is this any better?
No.
Is this any better?
Slightly.
All right.
Start again. Go ahead.
I wanted to talk about we had three amendments on the ballot today, where one was to try to take the abortion out of the Constitution.
I'm so sorry. I'm really sorry. Your phone is just – it's just – I can't do it. I apologize. Calling from a 901 area code. Who's this? 901.
Is this any better? No. Is this any better?
901.
All right.
901.
We had 3 minutes.
Okay. Calling from a 215 area code. Who's this?
Hey, this is Navid Wackman from Philadelphia.
Navid Wackman. Okay.
And I'm just
keep it going.
I'm just calling with. I'm with my friend Walter Block, and
good night.
Calling from an 847 area code. I got 43 people on the line, so I'm just not going to be that.
So Dracula impressions, get them going.
Yeah, exactly. Be ready.
Really work these bits out.
Hey, this is a name that's similar to a YouTuber that you know, but silly.
Calling from an 847 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Let me workshop. All right,
so Miami-Dade County.
Garrett from Wisconsin.
Hey, Garrett. Miami-Dade County is only 87% in, so a lot of those votes are still out there. And Gillum is up 60-40 there. Some that are extant. All right, so it's still possible in Florida. Still possible. Although,
is Broward completely in?
I don't think so.
Broward's one of the ones out.
Bay County does not look too good either, but we'll see.
But Miami's presumably has a lot more people.
Yeah. All right, go ahead. I'm sorry. What's your name?
Garrett from Wisconsin.
All right, Garrett, what's on your mind?
I just wanted to talk about getting Scott Walker out of the office as soon as possible.
Well, hopefully that'll happen tonight.
Well, yeah, you would know better than us.
I think so. I saw more people on the ground this year than even in the presidential election.
Wow. Wow.
The boots really moved it. Yeah, it's like 8 people knocking on the doors, leaving pamphlets, all that.
Great.
Well,
also, Michael, you need to kick off the Bill Clinton and go for Nation of Islam Obama.
Okay. I appreciate the directional advice. Thank you.
Garrett, fingers crossed. Appreciate the call.
All right. Good luck, little devil.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Wow, this is crazy. So restoring voting rights to felons is winning 64-36%.
There's some Klan people who want to restore the voting rights.
No, they just didn't know what the measure was.
No, it's clearly the Florida scammers who all turn out for DeSantis, but also might want to vote in the future.
Just kind of like, hey, I got a multi-level marketing scheme, and I'd like to vote again.
Exactly.
I support white supremacy. Imagine, you know, you sell some people.
But wait, hold on for a second. I mean, isn't that sort of a stunning disparity?
The same thing's going to happen in Idaho. I predict that Medicaid expansion is going to crush it, and they're going to vote for a bunch of atrocious Republican candidates. I don't know. It doesn't stun me that much.
But Medicaid expansion is different than re-enfranchising felons. And,
this is true.
Let's hear what.
Elections. You heard Steve Kornacki explaining how close it is. I can tell you that having worked in a couple of, you know, when I was not in media, I was working in politics, what you know is coming in at the end of the road is always Broward County, my former county. It's always bringing up the rear. And so for Democrats, basically what has to happen, as Steve mentioned, is that you're going to have to get a big piece of the vote in. Broward is the largest county. It's the county with the heaviest Democratic registration. It's a county that's heavily African American. It's a county where the Cuban American population is younger, and so they tend to vote more Democratic. But it also is a very slow counting county. It takes a long time to get that vote.
It's
in.
Like PTSD.
So basically, for Democrats to win, they essentially have to run up the score in places like Tampa, Hillsborough County, in places where I am now, Leon County, and they have to really max it out in Broward. So it is tight. All Florida elections are tight. Never listen to polls that say anybody is up 2-4 in Florida. No one's ever up 2-4 in Florida. It's always tight until the very end. You really won't know, really, until even the absentees come in. So it's tough. But I think people here are cautiously optimistic. You always have to be optimistic because Florida really
all right.
can go into
I mean, I don't have to be optimistic. I've gone this far.
You gotta
being, you know, fairly,
you just gotta.
I choose to be. I'm going to give. God. Let's choose. God. A fucking...
Calling from a 410 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Give us a half hour.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. This is Derek from Baltimore, Maryland.
Derek, what's on your mind?
Sad to report. Bob Hogan, Republican, beat to Ben Jealous, sadly.
Yes. We knew that.
By 2%.
Yeah.
By only by 2%?
Well, it was
I'm
more,
a positive.
It was more than 2%. It was more than 2%.
Well, by the positive side,
yep.
Ben Cardin beat the Democrat senator for. Hello?
Hi, Derek.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here. Okay. Ben Cardin beat.
Yeah, Derek. No, I mean we. Yeah, no, we know. We know. We know. Cardin won. Cardin won. And Jealous lost. Yeah. Go ahead.
I just want to thank him for bringing me to. Of course, I clam up when I get answered. Right. I just want to thank him for changing my mind. I used to be a libertarian, but. Now, I'd just like to thank you for bringing me onto the left. I started watching you, and now I'm left wing.
Well,
I am not a speaker. I'm sorry.
Derek, thank you. Don't worry about it.
I just wanted to.
Listen, we're all half in the bag right. Anyways. We're just sitting here. There's a lot of anxiety, and we're hoping.
I'm 17, by the way, so I couldn't vote, but I've been. Yeah, I'm probably your youngest viewer.
Yeah, that's a good age. I mean,
that's awesome.
Well done on getting onto libertarianism that early.
Yeah, you bailed on it before. You're going to have a great college experience now.
I've been kind of watching you for months, and I just hope that we win and Trump dies of, has a heart attack and dies on the toilet.
I think you have a bright future. I appreciate the call.
Maybe like his face. Grows.
All right, let's just take it easy. Just take it easy. Take it easy. Take it easy. All right, I appreciate the call, Derek.
Derek,
You have a bright future.
Elvis reprise.
Wow.
We don't have to get too graphic.
Elvis yourself.
I like the cheeseburger part.
Totally appreciate. Totally appreciate what you're.
I certainly like the idea of raging on a toilet eating fast food.
I think, you call him from a 310 area code. Is this who I think it is?
If you're talking to me, this is Digby. How you doing?
Hi, Digby. How are you? I'm glad it's you. For some reason, I didn't have you registered there, and now I've just lost. Am I there? Digby?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Can you hear me? All right, there we go.
I can hear you.
Yeah. Our phone system's playing is a little funky. Ladies and gentlemen, Digby. Oh, do we play the theme song?
I can't.
Oh, we can't play the theme song. I'm sorry.
that's okay.
Heather, you're out in California. You're watching what's going on. It is nerve wracking.
A little bit, but I, you know, can I also say that just if you're sitting in California, the sun just went down and. People are still standing in line here voting, and there's a whole half the country that hasn't, nobody's counted their votes yet. So, it's always a little bit disconcerting to be watching these nights. You know, having said that, I'm not an idiot, and I can see that this is not going to be, so far anyway, the gigantic blue tsunami that we were hoping for. But, I want everybody to remember there's only one thing that matters tonight, and that is that we get one more vote in the House of Representatives, then we need. That's all that's necessary, and it's all we should have ever been really hoping for, because that changes everything. And tomorrow morning, if we have a majority in the House starting in January, Donald Trump's agenda is done. It's over. It's not going to happen. I mean, they may, put through some more judges, and I'm sure he'll strut around like a conquering hero if they hold the Senate, but nonetheless, it really doesn't matter. What happens then is that we have one branch of government that will be doing its duty and will be doing the oversight that's necessary, and he will be stopped in his tracks from doing, you know, from carrying on with this agenda. There will be no more Devin Nunes running any intelligence committees. There won't be any more Trey Gowdy's, you know, running oversight committees. That will be over, and that is really the most important thing, because we have 2 years now, and right. You know, I hate to tell everybody, I hope y'all are ready for this. Tomorrow morning, the presidential race starts in earnest. Oh my God. But it does. Fuck. And that is a whole new field.
Three of the people in this office just passed out, I should tell you.
I know. I basically kind of, you know, it went into a little fugue state there for a second when I said it.
Can we pretend it's not
tomorrow?
But,
I mean, this is what's happening. And, I mean, this isn't the end. We're actually midway through this, you know, horrifying situation we're in. And if we manage to eke out a win in the House, and I suspect it's going to be bigger than just eke out a win. To be honest, I think, I mean, here in the West, you know, they're going to win a bunch of seats. And right. it's probably just going to be what everybody said it was going to be, right? They'd win the House and you know, the Republicans would hold the Senate. But that's all that's necessary for the moment. Then we're going to have the presidential race. We're going to have a bunch of oversight in the Senate. We've still got Robert Mueller on the line. Everybody needs to just kind of hold themselves. Something in this, you know, this is a, we are in a situation here where we've got half the country, and there are tens of millions of people who worship this cretinous imbecile that we have in the White House. And they do. They really, really like this guy. I'm sorry. It's not a delusion. It's not like, you know, they're mistaken or they have economic anxiety or there's some kind of a problem. They really like this guy. We need to accept that. And we need to recognize that in order to, you know, preserve the country, we're going to have to fight it on that level. So, you know, I'm not really feeling despondent. I mean, I would have loved it if there was a huge tsunami. But from what I, you know, I look at these people, or you watch Fox News, or just look at the Trump rallies. I mean, there are a bunch of people out there who really, really are getting off on this guy and everything that he stands for. And we got to deal with that. We can't just pretend that that's not real, because it's real, and we're going to have to fight it. So here we are tonight. Hopefully it's going to be better than what it looks, still early.
Right.
Like I said, people are still voting here. But we have to, you know, grapple with the fact that this is happening, and we're going to have to fight it. And it's, you know, well, unfortunately, it's just the beginning.
Well, yes, and that's true. And if, you know, a year and a half ago, somebody said to me, you know, and we're not there yet, obviously. So, that the Democrats will control the House after 2002, and they'll lose only three seats in the Senate max. And I think I would have been like, that sounds optimistic.
Yeah.
And you're going to pick up one or two governor seats in, you know, in the Rust Belt, let's say. I would have said that sounds a little bit optimistic. But the thing that is sort of disturbing, well, you, I'm telling you this, you know this, and I guess what I want you to do is to give me some type of answer that's going to make me feel better. But the thing that I think is disturbing is the singularity. I mean, like, I think that most people within my bubble, right? And my bubble, I think, encompasses maybe slightly less than 50% of the country, maybe slightly more. There was a sense that everybody was activated, right? Like, I mean, that everybody's hands were on deck. And to see that, and to see that it does not have and I guess maybe this is just, you know, sorry, Virginia, there's no Santa Claus or whatever it is. But to see that level of effort and it not sort of cut through this like butter, right? Like to see that energy and all it does is like eke out a slight win is scary, I think. and it's not like, you know, I was talking to Sean McElwee today, you know, a good 50% of Democratic candidates were running on a platform that was, you know, to the left, I would say, of 75% of the Democrats, maybe 80% of the Democrats that ran 10 years ago. And yet, we're not necessarily seeing, we're going to see, I think, significant results in the House, but we're not seeing that sense of like, we're not seeing the blue wave per se, right? We're not seeing the tsunami that it felt like was coming. And I think that's scary to people.
It is scary, and I'm disappointed. I mean, I would have hoped that we could have cut through that as well. But I got to tell you, look, you've got, you know, first of all, midterms just traditionally are not as interesting to the American public as a presidential race. That's
but
the reality
this,
of it.
This and felt like people were pretty, you know, were significantly more interested.
It felt
in
like
that.
It.
Right.
It felt like it, but, you know, look, and I think that there, and it's true. I mean, everybody was activated of the activist interested political base of the of both parties, apparently, it looks that both were activated. So what you had was a head to head race of the base. And I think what we were expecting was that maybe we'd see a bunch of independents come out, or maybe there'd be a huge surge of non-voters, you know, all this kind of thing. Well, you know, what is more likely is that we'll see that in a presidential race. I mean, that's just how that works. I mean, a lot of people, you know, and I wouldn't blame people. If you've been sitting there the last 2 years, I mean, you and I have to do this because we do it for a living, right? I mean, we have to pay close attention. We've got to pay close attention to Donald Trump and every word he says, and we're following on our Twitter feeds and all that other stuff. But for a lot of people, you know, this is just, you know, it's just insufferable. And right. And they have, you know, many people have just decided, you know. And so here what you had was a race where you had Donald Trump, dear leader of the Trump cult, and now the head, you know, the dear leader of the Republican Trump cult. It's the party itself. And then you had this sort of, you know, ephemeral Democratic resistance that's just sort of, it's not really centered on any person or any particular platform. It's just sort of, ugh, you know, we're coming up against Trump. Maybe that isn't enough to activate, you know, the huge number of people that are going to be necessary to really defeat him. Maybe we have to find, you know, there has to be an actual person around which you can build a campaign. Maybe it's got to, you know, I don't know if we'll have that. God help us, I hope we do. But there are a lot of, you know, new stars in the Democratic Party, I think, who've emerged in this. I mean, I think we're seeing the building of a new Democratic Party, which is the other upside of this, right? I mean, all this activism and organizing and all these new candidates that are running. I mean, that's the building of a party. That's a building of a movement, really. And that is, they're building the infrastructure for something that's going to be there for the future, regardless of what happens tonight. But, you know, also for the next 2 years. I mean, you know, this is the beginning of the Democratic Party building what should have been built, you know, which we all had hoped would be built during the Obama years, and instead sort of atrophied and didn't really happen. So, you know, I think that it's going to take, you know, the presidential race is really where the focus is going to be. It's Donald Trump on the ballot. We all felt he's on the ballot tonight, and in many ways he is. But when he's literally on the ballot, one is hopeful that the focus really comes into play and that there will be, you know, someone there that can articulate the other side nationally with the same level of attention that Donald Trump gets. Let's not forget, he dominates everything. The guy is, you know, I mean, he's just like an oxygen suck. Everything. He's there, you know, 24/7. You can't get rid of the guy. He's in your head. I dream about him. It's horrible. I mean, that's what he does to us. And so, you know, I just feel like, you know, again, I feel like this is the halfway point. I think we're still building. And hopefully we will have built some kind of a backstop in the U.S. Congress to stop him from doing his worst. And then, you know, we've got 2 more years of this stuff where right. We're just going to have to keep going. So anyway, you know, I'm not going to give up hope. I'm just not.
Well, I mean, we're going to have to be here tomorrow. And,
yep. Really? And, speak for yourself, buddy.
Well,
I'm giving you a preemptive notice on tomorrow's day off. But that's interesting. Like, so that the idea is that if I'm hearing you correctly, that so both bases are activated, And that there's just still a, whatever that middle swath of people is, they're just not enrolled. Well, I mean, that makes sense.
I mean, do we know that, though? I mean, do we know that there hasn't been, I mean, do we have the data in yet? I mean, I haven't been listening. Have they been able to crunch the numbers and say how many new voters are actually here? I mean, because we saw a lot of that in, you know, we saw all these records being broken about early voting and new voters and youth as a percentage of the vote, et cetera, et cetera. We don't know yet if that materialized or didn't materialize or, I mean.
Well, let me point out, and this was something I kept noticing. They kept saying that we were beating records for midterms, right. And they did. There's no doubt about that. The early voting beat it. I think that the young voters beat it. I think all of that, that they beat all those records for midterms. Great.
Right.
But that's midterms, right? So, you know, I don't know that that really says where those people, I mean, independents and middle of the road, you know, sort of, you know, people who don't vote all the time like we do, they don't vote in midterms. Now, more of them did this time than usual, but that doesn't mean that we've hit the sort of, you know, the total limit of how many people are going to vote altogether. I mean, I just don't think that this midterm shows that. This is it. This is that we've reached all the voters, and there are more Trump voters than there are us. I don't think we know that either. I just suspect that we've had a really great midterm turnout, but it's still not presidential level, and I think presidential level has to be more than anything we could expect. That requires a really good candidate, by the way. I mean, that requires somebody special, and I don't know who that's going to be, but it's got to be somebody special because that's what it takes to really get people activated. Their side, you know, they've got him, and the Democrats have to find something to equal that. So hopefully
I mean, there's like Volusia County right there that's interesting in Florida. The DeSantis's to Gillum's vote mirrors exactly Trump to Clinton minus 2% for Johnson. So there's, I mean, that it's just there's been nothing that Trump has done that has in any way shaken the foundations, I guess, of his support.
They love him.
Yeah, they like what he does.
They love him. Yeah.
All right. I
don't know what to say. I don't know how to explain these people. But you know, I'm sitting here today, looking at this and thinking, you know, these are people who listen to him speak gibberish night after night. I mean, they do in his rallies. I don't know if you've been listening to his rallies in the recent days.
Yeah, I mean
he's not even making sense. I mean, it's ridiculous, and they cheer him and they love him. I don't know what to say about this. These people are walk among us.
Well, that's
what do we do?
That's the fear, right? It's just like that.
Yeah.
We have hit a critical mass, and that there are not the the resources to reverse this. Now, I should say, certainly, there have been times in our society, in the history of this country, where people must have felt more desperate than we're feeling now, or situations that have been more desperate. I mean, certainly, obviously.
I don't know. It was a really good Patreon system in the Weimar period.
Well, I mean, I think, I mean, on but it does feel like, I mean, you know, on one hand, we have this narrative that we're in late stage capitalism, which
definitely
suggests that the everything is the aggregate, that that the weight of history is landing now, and there's no evidence from this election that people are open to a solution to that as opposed to enjoying it. I mean, we can wish that, but like I say, the Democrats have run, you know, the most progressive candidate in the field of the Democrats won the primary and is running in Florida.
Oh, in Florida. Okay. Yeah.
And still possible he could win, but he's certainly not walking away with it. He certainly does not appear to have, you know, shaken the foundations of where people were in Florida. So I don't know. I mean, it's disturbing. Now, Beto O'Rourke has sort of jumped back into the lead with 70% in by 2%. That's encouraging. I don't think he's quite as progressive as Gillum, but I think he's whiter.
And it's Texas.
And he's Texas. So I don't know.
Also, it is like that. People, a lot of people are talking on Twitter about that felon re-enfranchisement, and that is like
that's going to do a lot for 2020.
It's going to do a lot for 2020. I mean, presuming it's not overridden by the Florida legislature, right?
Right.
Just because the referendum
true
passes,
story.
But Digby, how do you like? How do you do? You have any way of reconciling that the re-enfranchisement of 1.5 million felons, that that referendum is going to win by 15 points in Florida?
It makes no, it makes zero sense to me. It is impossible for me to believe that all those, you know, that many of the DeSantis, Rick Scott voters want to re-enfranchise felons. I mean, how can that be? I mean, is it a weirdly written, you know, proposition on the ballot and they didn't know what they were voting for? I mean, I honestly, that is really a stunningly weird anomaly. And you know, it's Florida, so who the hell knows? You know, what the butterfly ballot, God only knows what happened there. But it's very strange, very strange.
Super strange.
I don't understand it.
Yeah, I don't get it either. I don't know. I mean, it's just, it's very, very weird. I feel like somebody could write a book about just that delta between those two things. But maybe it was the way that it was written. People just misinterpreted it. Maybe.
I mean, it doesn't make any sense that conservatives, and you have to be, I mean, look, Ron DeSantis and Rick Scott both, I mean, they are very right wing. The idea that people who would vote for them would simultaneously want more, you know, ex-felons to vote, it's a weird, weird anomaly. I mean, somebody really should look at it, honestly. They need to do an analysis of how that could happen and do some polling to find out how something like that could happen down there. I mean, Florida's so weird, you know. Our elections just hinge on it, you know, all the time, and we're always just riveted by everything that's going on down there. But it's just bizarre, and I guess people could feel that way. But maybe they just don't like, you know, Gillum, you know, and Bill Nelson, I guess. I mean, maybe, but it just makes no sense. I don't know. You know, I'll never figure that state out. I won't get it. Say, have you heard yet whether or not Dave Brat and the Spanberger House race has been called?
The last I saw, Brat was in the lead, but only by a point or two, with about, I think, 75% in. So I don't know yet. Matt, do you see anything else about that? Or Brat in Virginia? Has not been called yet. Don't know what the... what the spread is, but that's
it looks New York Times is saying 151 to 150 total votes, and 94% reporting, so it's a close one.
Yep.
Oh, well, I'd love to see that guy go down. He's one of the people. I was glad to see Barbara Comstock go down. There will be a number of, you know, House races where we can take some pleasure in seeing some of the worst be taken out, and I think that will happen. And you know, you've got the West here, California, and you know, I feel like a lot of these people are going to go down here, these, you know, and
right.
Who knows, I mean, maybe even Devin Nunes, I don't know.
In New York, I mean, I think you know, with the numbers that Cuomo is racking up, he 75% to 25%, something to that effect. So I anticipate we're going to see a couple of pickups here, in Pennsylvania has yet to come in. So, you know, the House, obviously, still very much in play. You can't take anything for granted. Digby, thanks so much for your time today. We will...
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Sam.
We will talk again soon, and hopefully...
All right.
We will...
hang in there, everybody.
Yes. Hang in there, folks.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Digby. Let's go to the IMs. I'm anticipating, I think, David Dayen, will be calling us in a moment, And let's go to the IMs here. Political jargon, Florida amendments, yes on restoring voting rights, yes on banning offshore drilling. I mean, it really is strange. Gulag Greg, long time no talk MR beauties. TYT, is Jimmy Dore doing election coverage tonight in case anyone hasn't done enough intoxicants for the election, wants to kill some brain cells that way. Anne in Portland here, I swear there's zero correlation between my donating beer to the show and a nail biting. Oh, Anne in Portland sent us a bottle of really nice
Glenfiddich.
Yes.
Wow.
Scotch whiskey.
Thank you, Anne.
Yes, thank you so much, Anne. We have not cracked into that. I was a little bit nervous about that, frankly, and I feel like that was a smart thing to be nervous about. I think we're going to hear from David Dayan in just a second. Hold on for 1 second. Come here.
We have multiple storylines at this hour.
We have multiple storylines at this hour.
Big picture freak out that is genuinely bipartisan is the freak out in the Democratic Party that Beto O'Rourke might actually win Texas, and the freak out in the Republican Party that any Democrat might win a statewide race in Texas, which has not happened in the last.
There was a school board race in El Paso.
Let's go to the phone. On the phone, ladies and gentlemen, he writes for any publication that is worth anything in anywhere. David Dayan, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for putting me on here tonight.
All right, let's start with this. How is it that Amendment 4 in Florida is going to be ratified, or the referendum, I should say, by, you know, a 15-20% margin? And Andrew Gillum looks like, 99% in. He's down by almost 100,000 votes. Bill Nelson, a little bit closer. How do you reconcile that?
I think it's hard to reconcile. I really don't know how. The Intercept did a couple reports on Amendment 4, and I think it was, kind of framed as a fairness issue that in a successful way, obviously. It wasn't sort of sucked up in this nationalized vortex the way that seemingly these other races were around Donald Trump. Now, it might just have been oversight on his part. He certainly would have fit with his, law and order, stop crime kind of idea to, encourage people to vote against that. But I think he overlooked it. And so, and also, I'm not sure that there was any organized opposition on the air to Amendment 4. I'd have to check that again, but I'm pretty sure there wasn't. So, your guess is as good as mine. That does seem like a discordant result, but of course, there's some votes still outstanding in some liberal leaning districts in South Florida. So we'll see what happens.
Well, yeah, it's conceivable. Nelson is down by, 60, 70,000 votes with I don't know how many votes are extant. 2%, but I don't know what that figure is. I suppose I could do the math, but I can't. And so it's possible, Nelson and or Gillum could win. But even still, it's still a huge disparity. All right. So what give me your 30,000. Colorado Governor Jared Polis.
Yes.
Just won with 52% of the vote in. He's been declared the winner by NBC anyways.
And the Twitter machine is telling me that Fox News just called the House for the Democrats. But, take that for what it's worth.
That's weird because there still seems to be.
I think it's way too early to actually do that. I think it's rather early to make that call, but
the Republicans are going to hold the House.
There you go.
The majority reports response call.
All right. Well,
reverse jinx.
Yeah. There you go. All right.
With fire.
Well, so okay. So,
I gotta say though,
now,
I mean,
Broward County only there's still 17% that is outstanding in Broward County. And Nelson is up 69% to 31% there. So I don't like.
I feel like I'm 15 again.
Well, he's doing the math there. I think that means that there is. Well, I can't tell what he's writing. If there's 17%, if there's almost 20% left.
What are you looking at, Kornacki?
There's another. Yeah, there's another 100,000 votes there almost. You know, that could be the difference. So I guess we'll see.
We'll see on that. I mean, Florida aside, the races are shaping up similar to what was expected, though not the perhaps the blowout that some have hoped for. It's still tracking like a Democratic victory in the House.
Right. Yes.
It's not tracking like an overwhelming Democratic victory in the House, but it's still tracking like a Democratic victory in the House. And that's particularly true of these seats in the Midwest. I think we're going to see some pickups in Illinois. There's a seat in Oklahoma that actually Kendra Horn is still leading with not a whole lot in. Those two seats in Kansas look like they're going to flip. So, I mean, there's still, you know, things are tracking sort of the way as expected. I mean, still none of these Pennsylvania seats have been called. None of the New Jersey seats have been called where you expect some pickups there.
New York as well. We've got at least one or two, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think the drama of the Florida races is and the fact that some of the you know, reach races in Florida in the House went the Republicans' way is kind of coloring the sort of mood ring of the liberals right now. But not a whole lot has changed, I don't think.
Right. I mean, I think there is just a lot of I feel like there's been a lot of emotion invested in Florida and in Georgia that may be outsized in terms of their actual practical implications. But I feel like from an emotional standpoint, it would have been just a big victory. Now, of course, also it has implications for, you know, 2020 to have the governorship of Georgia and the governorship of Florida.
Oh, absolutely.
That's a big deal. That's a really big deal in terms of the 2020 election, but in terms of the immediate practical implications, but also, you know, to see Donnelly go down robustly.
Well, you know, I mean, here's one thing that we can say, right? So you have those three races. Now, I know Indiana is traditionally a more conservative spot than Ohio and Wisconsin, but all three of those states went to Donald Trump in 2016, and you had Tammy Baldwin win going away. You had Sherrod Brown win going away. Both of them running populist campaigns on pretty progressive issues. Neither of them deciding to vote for things like the bank deregulation bill. Both of them running on kitchen table issues. And winning early, like winning quickly, going away. And you have Donnelly, whose advertising was all about running away from the Democrats, trying to sort of toe this line in the middle, and obviously voted for the bank deregulation bill. He was on the Senate. He helped write it. He was on the Senate Banking Committee. And it didn't help him. Right. And there was never any belief that showing this bipartisanship with Donald Trump was the thing that was going to help you in 2018. And so I think that's a story that you can tell.
Right. And I guess, you know, I think that was part of what the allure of Gillum is and was, because it tells a sort
right.
of progressive narrative. I mean, Chuck Todd at the beginning of the night in, you know, was extolling to the other members of the MSNBC panel. The Democrats probably have a lesson to be learned for the way that, you know, Abrams and Gillum are running in the South. And,
right.
you know, at that point, I was convinced, like, oh, my God, their internal numbers must be, you know, they must be convinced yeah. that there's a walk.
I mean,
Chuck Todd doesn't go out on the limb, with all due respect to Chuck Todd.
Chuck Todd has a long-term agenda for socialist politics in the South, though.
He is playing yeah. the real long game.
Yeah.
Michigan governor, 44% in. That's not that much. But Whitmer seems to be in the lead. We'll see by a significant mm-hmm. amount. But, you know, 44% in, that doesn't mean that much. So, okay. So you, David, you are mm-hmm. been named the chairman of the DNC. What do you do on
right.
what do you do this week? I mean, towards let's I'll give you till Monday.
Well, I mean obviously we're a long way from knowing what's going to happen here. But I do think that there needs to be a recognition that all races are national now.
Right.
All races are national.
Explain what you mean by that, just so that people understand. Explain what you mean by that, because
you look at a race like, yeah,
it's not just that it's national; it's that they are extremely tribal.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you look at something like, we were just talking about Indiana, so you know, there are local issues that are specific to Indiana that just don't amount to a hill of beans anymore. This is about expressing your discontent with one political party or another. That's kind of what these elections have come down to. They're just a primal scream, really. I think what we're going to see is that Donald Trump is discontented among women, and particularly suburban women, and that's going to show through in the seats that they're going to pick up in the House, and you know, whether you're talking about the seats in the Illinois suburbs, Lauren Underwood, who is likely to win that race up there, or whether you're talking about the seats in Pennsylvania. I still haven't seen the seat from my parents' area. Pennsylvania 1, which is Bucks County, where I grew up. But that is not sort of an expression of local differences, I don't
right.
think you can say. I think you can say that is an expression of discontent with the national political party, whether it's the Republicans or Democrats. And what you saw in Florida is Gillum and Nelson outperforming the numbers that everyone traditionally thought you need to win in Florida
right.
in those, you know, the I-5 corridor and Southern Florida. They hit the numbers, but the areas outside the metro areas were where, Republicans, you know, picked up more votes than expected. And that's what we saw in 2016 too, right?
Right.
Now that has held for the Southeast, but that hasn't necessarily held for the Midwest, which is what won Donald Trump the presidency.
Yeah.
That hasn't held in the Midwest.
I was just having that conversation with Josh Orton, as you know, who's in Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
That the, oddly enough, the Rust Belt, which is supposedly what won, well, not supposedly, but I mean, I guess, you know, Every time he won a state, he won the electoral votes. But the Rust Belt was sort of the hinge. And
yeah.
it appears like they're returning back to
that,
the Democratic fold.
Right. Doesn't that track, though?
So I was out in Iowa just a month ago. in the northwest part of the state, following the campaign of J.D. Scholten, who is running against Steve King, white nationalist Steve King, and, you know, spent 3 or 4 days there, had the opportunity to really dig in on what the feeling was there, and, you know, saw a lot of former Republicans talking about how they made a terrible mistake. You know, obviously I was deep in farm country. You're talking about areas where the trade issue has punctured a bit, but also the issue of the USDA not being on side of family farmers. That might have been even more of an issue in that area. So you know,
that became localized.
I think that this swing, yeah. I mean, there was part of that. I mean, but you know, the undercurrent of the King Scholten race is obviously King's white supremacist rhetoric, but that leads to the critique that he's incredibly ineffective and that he's not helping the constituents in that area who are largely rural and in farm communities. So,
right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I do think the Midwest has swung to an extent. I think we're seeing that in the numbers still, but again, it's a long way to go.
What do you think account? Is it because there are localized issues? But I mean, you know, like Wisconsin, Ohio, Illinois, Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about those rates. Your races. You're talking about how the short-term trade issue has affected people, and you're talking about, you know, the economy has been on the same trajectory as it was, you know, at that point in 2016. It really has there's been limited change to that trajectory. The tax cuts have given sort of a short-term push, but the trajectory has been relatively the same. Well, that trajectory wasn't very good in the Midwest and the Rust Belt. You know, it could just be, look, he's been there 2 years and they haven't done that much for me. Certainly Democrats won the messaging battle in the tax cuts. They certainly won the messaging battle on health care. And in those Midwest districts that, you know, which are far from the Mexico border, that may have mattered quite a bit more.
Right. They're less racist. I mean,
I'm not saying they're less racist. I'm just saying that
they're sort of less racist.
It's just a different environment.
Right.
Well, maybe.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. I mean, you know, it's I don't know. There's going to be. And what's your sense of the youth vote? I mean, do you have a? I mean, you know, obviously we don't have any of the data yet, and I'm just curious if do you have any sense of like did that materialize? Are there? Do you think there's more slack? I guess in the Democratic vote because it's a midterm. In other words, if we say like, okay, Democrats outperform, just making up numbers now, but they outperform their normal midterm, whatever that baseline is, performance by 25% or 30%. Right. And Republicans outperformed it only by 15%, but their baseline was higher to begin with. And that's why it comes in about, let's say, just even. I'm just throwing out numbers here. Is there more slack? I mean, because Republicans... a higher percentage of them come out for midterms, just generally speaking. Is there more opportunity with the same amount of like Democratic energy, let's say, that because right. of the differences between these off-year and on-year elections that more people are going to come out?
Well, let's talk about a few headwinds. By the way, I'll throw out that Florida 26, Debbie Mucarcel Powell has won, according to AP, beating Carlos Curbelo. So that's a pickup for the Democrats down in Miami area. And I actually have seen that the Attorney General of Texas is actually slightly behind his challenger. Ken Paxton, who's under felony indictment right now, is losing at the moment to his Democratic challenger, Justin Nelson. Wow. Okay, so to answer your question, there were tremendous headwinds for Democrats. Number one, the economy is humming along, right? Unemployment is at pretty much low levels. It's, as I say, on the same trajectory, but it's the economy is doing well, and usually that means that redounds to the benefit of the party inside the White House. And the party in Congress is leading Congress right now is the same. That's number one. Number two is, you know, we've heard since 2010 that drop-off voters, transient voters, voters that don't frequently show up in midterm elections are on the Democratic side. The demographics of those voters, younger, more minorities, more on the Democratic side. I saw an exit poll that showed that Democrats basically split the senior vote. That was early. I'm not sure if it's correct now. By the way, Kansas third, Sharice Davids, is projected now to win. That's a district in Kansas City area.
We should say that, also, Kobach is going down, which is also nice.
Well, so there you go.
We'll see.
So I'm setting up these headwinds, right?
Right.
And, you know, that's significant. Those, you know, just those two alone are fairly significant headwinds that would have, you know, put the Republican Party in front. The headwind on the other end is that 2 years in, the party in power in the White House tends to do badly in midterm elections. We haven't had an opportunity to see that with a Republican president since 2006. That was a very good election for the Democrats. 2002 was not. That was right after 9/11. It was a fear-based election, and Republicans were able to succeed. They had a very good map in the Senate in 2002, and that's the other similarity between 2002 and 2018, which is the Republican map in the Senate is one of the best maps for Republicans that you right. could ever hope for. There were very few pickup opportunities. So you put all those things together. And this outcome is not completely out of the blue, and the outcome, we should all say, is still tracking toward a Democratic takeover of the House of Representatives.
Right.
I mean, I've seen nothing in the numbers to show that Republicans are going to pull out the House of Representatives. Now that's you know maybe that will happen down the road here, but you know Fox News has called it.
Right.
For the Democrats.
Right.
MSNBC is at 90% confidence that the Democrats will take the House. Here's another one. New Jersey 11, Mikey Sherrill. This was expected. Is a Democrat pickup in one of the New Jersey districts. I expect probably three New Jersey flips. There's a scenario where there's only one Democrat or one Republican from the House left in New Jersey after tonight.
Wow. Well, I just got
it's what we thought.
I just got a report from in the Delgado Faso race in New York's 19th. Now this is out of Hudson, which is in Columbia County, tends to be more favorable to the Democrats. But I mean, Delgado is destroying him there. Now. The strength of Faso.
And that's a seat that Faso won 2 years ago against Zephyr Teachout.
That's
so,
right.
You know, once again.
Now, well, with that said, she also won Hudson, too. So, but I think he's outperforming her there as well. I mean, he's.
Right.
But Hudson is not indicative of that district. There's a lot of other areas, but it, you know.
And I should add that, you know, people have been going crazy over the 538 real-time forecast for this, for the House and Senate. It was, I think, as low as, you know, a 4-in-7 chance that Democrats win control. And now it's back up to 70%. So as these, as these races come in, you're seeing a decent outcome. Now, is it a wave outcome? You know, I don't know what a wave means necessarily, but it's an outcome that's going to get them control of the House in all likelihood. I don't want to be a Dewey Defeats Truman person, but it's likely to get them the House. Are the numbers big enough for Nancy Pelosi to have a mandate to take the House of Representatives? By the way, Laura Kelly, NBC News, has projected wins the Kansas governor race over Chris Kobach.
Yep, so there you go.
That's a big victory. That's an enormous victory for America and the citizens of Kansas, and shows how that's a race where local issues absolutely matter, because Sam Brownback destroyed the state of Kansas.
I was just going to say,
right wing tax policy.
I was just going to say, to me, that the failure of the entire left establishment and anti-establishment for us not to be able to say, like, these are Kansas politics, right? In the way that we say San Francisco politics or Chicago, is to me just a stunning failure. I mean, you know, Kansas is the best example of the Republicans running their experiment. Everyone who's listening to the sound of my voice knows this story because I've said it over and over again. Sam Brownback gets in 2012. He basically adopts Ronald Reagan's economic plan. He brings in Arthur Laffer, the guru of Reaganomics, if you will, and slashes the taxes the way that we've seen on a national level. Of course, Kansas can't print their own money, cannot deficit spend. Their slashing of taxes was going to increase revenue, and all it did was bankrupt the state, destroy their education system. 4 years later, a Republican-controlled Senate and House raises taxes again because they're in such dire straits. Their employment lagged by their neighbors. Their economic growth lagged. The whole thing was a tremendous failure, and you never hear anybody talk about it on the left. Right. Anyways, it's absurd.
And when I reported on the primary race in that Kansas House seat that Charisse Davids was victorious in tonight, that was the headline. Like, Sam Brownback destroyed our education system, and this is all we're going to talk about between now and November.
Yep.
And so, you know, I think this election has been nationalized to an extent, but has it been fully nationalized? Can you still break through with certain ideas and policies? Absolutely. And I think the experience of folks in Kansas obviously led to a pretty strong victory for Laura Kelly in a race that was seen as much closer.
Yeah. I mean, it is. It's going to be fascinating, if not depressing. Maybe it's both.
Now, Chris Kobach, by the way, is going to get some sort of counselor job in the Trump White House. There's no way that doesn't happen.
Right.
That will happen. He will get something in the Department of Homeland Security. Probably not a confirmable position. Some sort of counselor position or something like that. Nothing where I'll have to actually get confirmed.
Right.
But or maybe so if Republicans. I mean, the problem with this outcome that we're looking at, a Democratic House and a Republican Senate, is that the Senate can just be
52-53 seats for Republicans, and they can afford to release a couple of guys
just be a judicial confirmation factory. I mean, that's what they've been since the tax bill. Essentially, all that has been done in the Senate has been confirming judges. And they just called Max Rose in Staten Island as a flip.
Oh, really?
Democrat,
wow. That's
over
huge.
Dan Donovan.
Now, I've got to say that Rose, enormous. Yeah, I mean, and he ran against both parties. He was very, but he got all the support. I mean, from I never
right
in the entire time I have lived in New York for 24 years, I have never heard more people I know say the word Staten Island before. I mean, in terms
so
of
they were out in full force trying to flip that. That's the only district in the five boroughs that is Republican.
And
right?
It got everybody in those other boroughs was focused on raising money and volunteering for Rose. That's great though, because you win that seat. I mean, that is, you know, Staten Island.
Yeah.
Staten Island, they almost reelected the former FBI guy, I can't remember his name, who threatened to throw somebody off the balcony of, of
Grimm,
Congress on
Grimm.
TV.
That was the same district.
Yeah,
same district.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, also Elaine Loria, who is in the Tidewater area, defeated Scott Taylor, who was a Republican who was in a bit of a scandal over issuing fake signatures to get an independent candidate on the ballot, like a scam to try to get votes, to drive votes away from the Democrat. Looks like he came up short tonight. So it's likely to be a situation where both sides will have something to talk about.
Let me ask you this: How does it impact Trump?
Trump has already telegraphed that he's going to, and he now has reason with the Indiana victory and with the possible Florida victory to do it even more. He's going to say that I saw, and I conquered in those states. I won the Senate races. There's no such thing as a House of Representatives. I won. I was on the ballot and I won. I think that's all you're going to hear. And, as far as his agenda, his agenda is focused on, executive orders and confirming judges, which the Senate will be able to do. So, remember, you have John McCain no longer in the Senate. You'll have Jeff Flake out of the Senate. You'll have Bob Corker out of the Senate. You'll have these sort of fake adversaries of Trump gone. And in their place, Marsha Blackburn, who's going to vote down the line with Trump. So, and also Mitt Romney will be in the U.S. Senate for some reason. This time around, and
won't he be the fake the Jake?
Yes,
the
he's going to take their place. He's going to be on Face the Nation every week for the next 2 years, and he's going to be the new person to take up the mantle of Paul Ryan in terms of deficit politics. That's going to be what he'll talk about. Because he supported it in his presidential run. He supported the Ryan budget. He's going to be the new guy. He's going to be the new Graham Rudman saying, you know, I didn't get here. I didn't vote for this tax bill, but we're going to have to do something about spending. I wrote this feature for Talking Points Memo about social insurance and what it would mean next year, depending on the election. And there are some sort of cliffs. First of all, there needs to be a spending deal done in December in a lame duck Senate, lame duck Congress. That's number one. And number two, next year, there needs to be another budget deal or sequestration comes back. And the debt limit comes back next year. And so there are these you know, high pressure must pass situations where this kind of stuff on spending, particularly on social insurance programs, can come back into play. And it's very dangerous. You're going to have, essentially Trump and Senate Republicans saying, look, we either are going to destroy your non-discretionary spending programs by returning sequestration on non-defense, or we're going to we're going to cut Social Security, or we're going to do something to Medicare. This is a very real prospect, especially with the way things are shaping up right now, it's going to be something that I think you're going to need to mobilize against if you're in the position to not want that to happen.
And people are going to have to mobilize based on an issue set.
That's right. That's right.
And it's going it was one thing to see, and I mean, if they don't have the House, they won't be able to do this. But it was one thing when people were going to have their health care taken away. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see, and you and I went through this back in 2005, right? But it was a slightly different dynamic, the assault on Social Security. But David, I think we'll have some time to talk about that in the future. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right, man. Talk to you soon.
I have a Matt pick.
You have a Matt pick?
Yeah. Minnesota's 3rd congressional district. Dean Phillips is a Democrat. Eric Paulson is the Republican. I've been trolling not an official staffer for Eric Paulson, but a guy that's volunteering to be his Twitter person.
Now, wait a second. This is different from the actual Minnesota Republican Party, who you've been trolling on Twitter for a year, right?
That's the – it's the Congressional District 3 Minnesota account, GOP. And it's sort of loosely affiliated with some of the Republicans there, like Jeff Johnson. And it was more focused on Eric Paulson, but it's been more focused on Jeff Johnson lately because, well, it looks like Dean Phillips is going to win that and flip it for the Dems with 56 over 44 with 96% reporting.
I mean, it does appear that the Democrats will take the House at this point. The Republicans have all but locked up a majority in the Senate. There are 12 seats that are undecided. Republicans have locked up 49. The 12 seats that are extant are probably mostly in the West. I mean, Florida, obviously. Florida is super close. Like,
they say it's going to be recounted.
It appears that it's going to be recounted. I mean, the numbers I just saw a moment ago were like 60,000 with 1% extant for, and Nelson was down. So, I mean, that is going to be a recount. It may even be a recount with Gillum, although it doesn't seem to be quite as close yet, but we will see. And then presumably, I don't know if the numbers we're seeing include absentee ballots and provisional ballots. I mean, so this is going to be one of those things, like, we may not know for a week or two what's going on in Florida. I don't know that the balance of the Senate will be implicated. All right, now it appears that Ted Cruz is taking the lead. And in Arizona, only 36% in, so too close to tell right there. They're separated. But it feels like we have a fairly divided kind of, oh, okay, yeah. So, all right, so I'm looking at the Scott Nelson, 55,000 votes, 99% in. So that's – I'd rather have a 55,000 vote lead, frankly. Than not.
Me too.
Let's take some phone calls. Calling from a 612 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hey, Sam. This is Logan calling from Florida.
Logan in Florida. What's on your mind, Logan?
Man, this is pretty much a disaster as far as, you know, the election could have gone here. DeSantis had so much energy, Sam. He got his people out. We had young people voting. We had
DeSantis
African-Americans
or
Gillum, getting out to
you're
vote.
Talking about DeSantis or Gillum?
Gillum.
Yeah, okay.
Gillum. And DeSantis was able to channel the Trump support. And I have to say, I really haven't seen any decline in the level of Trump support within the state of Florida since he's taken office. All the people who supported Donald Trump in 2016 still support him just as fervently in 2018. And I don't know how to break that.
Well, the only thing
Rick
I can
Scott, Rick Scott is a relentless campaigner.
Yeah, and he's also quite well.
Bill Nelson didn't like to leave the house.
Right.
Bill Nelson didn't like to leave the house. And Andrew Gillum had energy and momentum. But I think between Rick Scott's relentless campaigning and just the sheer Trump factor on DeSantis' side, it was unbreakable. I don't think we're going to pull it out here.
It certainly doesn't look good. I mean, it doesn't look good.
85,000 votes with 98 with Gillum down.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I can tell you is that when you looked at 2020, theoretically, there's more slack in the Democrats, right? Like that there is Democrats come out more during the presidential elections and maybe they've made up some ground there. But right now, I mean, that's immaterial and it's just sort of hypothetical. And Ted Cruz was just projected the winner of the Senate in Texas. All right, man.
Well, and history suggests that you're right, that the presidential election will be a better turnout for Democrats. But at the time being, I mean, as Digby mentioned earlier, the true thing to look at tonight is whether we can take control of the House.
Yep.
And all indications appear to be that we will. So I can rest somewhat easier tonight with this absolute disaster in Florida with the fact that the House of Representatives is in Democrat control.
Right. Appreciate the call. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Sam.
It was Logan in Florida. Calling from 561 area code. Who's this?
Hey, is this me?
I think so.
Hold on. This is also
hold
important.
On 1 second.
Gretchen Whitmire looks like she's winning Michigan. That's
she's been
big,
projected the winner, yeah. Or she's.
I've seen Abdul El Sayed has congratulated the governor elect, Kristen Whitmire.
Okay, so there you have it.
That's a big race.
All right, who's this? Who's this? Calling from a 561 area code.
This is Mark down in Palm Beach County. How y'all doing?
Mark in Palm Beach County. Good. How you doing? Mark, what are you doing? Are you leaving the house? What are you doing?
Good. Leaving the house so I don't wake up the baby. So, okay. Yeah, I was one of the first people in the lines at the polls at 7 a.m. this morning. And I could talk your ear off about Florida. I'm a native down here, and we're all fucking crazy. But this is incredibly important, not just to you guys, because you're not in Florida and you don't know Florida politics, but for Floridians to know. When I was in line, first thing in the morning, 7 a.m., I know exactly how to vote. I need one of two things in my possession. I need an ID, and I need that, you know, registered voter registration, and I show up to vote. The guy who is doing my polling tells me that he can't find me on the voter registration rolls because he can't scan the barcode on my Florida-issued driver's license. So I have to fill out a provisional ballot. I told him to fuck off, in nicer terms than that, and to look me up manually, and he did. And, of course, I'm there on the voter rolls manually. So I tried to get the word out as much as I could. But if you have a new ID, the actual state-issued new ID with a hologram photo of your own face on it, the new version of a Florida driver's license, if you go to vote with that, they can't scan the barcode on it. You have to manually enter that from the voter registration.
anyone using a tablet on, you know, Florida, you know, precincts, when they're actually doing the voters, they're telling people that they need to use provisional ballots. So when you're talking about not having absentee and provisional ballots in, I would be highly surprised if there wasn't an like an absurd amount of provisional ballots this midterm, because if it wasn't for me literally like causing ruckus at my precinct saying you guys are giving out false information, the vast majority of people just would have went, all right, fine, and filled out a provisional ballot. So, and that's coming from like, yeah, if you have a new driver's license in Florida, they don't scan the barcode. They say you need to fill out either a provisional ballot or you need to talk to the person who's in charge of, every precinct has their own, like, whatever, election supervisor, and you got to go wait in the line and talk to them. And most people have to get to work anyway, so they just don't do it. Wow. But yeah, when it's this close, stuff like that is scary. You know, when you talk about voter suppression, usually it's people being turned away from the polls. This is that weird kind of voter suppression where it's, you know, you do everything right and then they turn it around. But yeah, Florida's crazy. I'm not going to take up too much of your time. But
appreciate the call, Mark.
I did call in. Appreciate it. Have a good one.
Thanks. Interesting. We'll see. Meanwhile, Pete Sessions gone. Republican from Texas, beaten by Colin Allred. I think that takes the number down to maybe 10 now that the Democrats need to pick up. And, you know, we haven't even talked about New York or California yet or Pennsylvania. So I think it's, you know, relatively safe to assume at this point that the
Did you hear that 538 shut off their needle for a moment earlier in the night? I think it might be still off, but they had it shut down. And at one point they had the Republicans, yeah, like an hour ago, they had Republicans projected to win the House or hold the House, and they shut everything down. They're like, oh, we think the model's being a bit too sensitive. But now their model has Democrats up to 7 and 8 chance of winning control of the House. And then Senate looks obviously very unlikely.
Yeah. Beto O'Rourke came pretty close. Ted Cruz, projected winner.
I mean, he was laying the groundwork anyway. The reason it sort of feels like more of a downer is because I was actually expecting Gillum to win. And then, I don't know, I thought Ted Cruz was going to win this too.
But this is the only reason I realized. I actually thought Abrams and Gillum are the only reasons I feel bad. Everything else, I think the Democrat, I always thought they'd take the House. I did not think they'd take the Senate. And if those expectations haven't been elevated, it would be Kris Kobach is gone, big win in Michigan, Democrats get the House. I'm very surprised. I'm sad and disappointed that Mike DeWine took out Cordray in Ohio.
Oh, did that get called?
Apparently. Oh. We should maybe wait on that, but I am seeing it doesn't look great.
All right, let's go to the phone. It's John from San Antonio. John, I've just noticed that you've been hanging on for a long time. I'm sorry. We have literally 50 calls on the line. John, what's going on?
I just want to reiterate that, you know, the main thing, basically what Michael said, you know, the main thing I've been looking at is the House. And, you know, it, like 538 right now has a – what is it? 33, you know, is their projection right now, which, you know, before I think it was 34. So not really much of a change. I mean, everything is kind of moving along. I agree, obviously, the Abrams, I don't know if that's been called yet, but she's very likely going to lose. And Gillum, you know, and obviously the Nelson race are obviously disappointing. But, you know, they did tighten up a little bit. And so, I mean, they were margin of error races. So it's not totally shocking, but obviously disappointing. There's still a lot going on in the House, but I mean, it looks like it's pretty much the projections among the 16 out of the 18 are pretty much all coming true. I don't think any of those people are going to lose. And, it's, you know, they're picking up two in Virginia, the second and the seventh. like you said, the 32nd Colin Allred is going to win there. I'm totally shocked about that 11th district, Max Rose. Rachel, I think her name is Bitkofer. She's a poli-sci professor at Christopher Newport University. She picked that race. She said that the Democrats are going to win 46. So I was very surprised at that. I mean, things are still, you know, looking real totally on track, you know, with a few. I think they actually may go over that total, 33. I mean, like Carolyn Bordeaux's up by 7, 42% in Georgia. And, I mean, it's just, I think, you know, things overall are pretty good. One another surprise, Matt Longjohn up over Fred Upton in Michigan 6th with 49% in with a 4-point lead. You know, that was way down on people's list as a possible win. Also, Betsy Londrigan on Illinois 13th up by 9 with 47% over Rodney Davis, the Republican. So, you know, the 16th, this is the one thing where there was the outlier poll in Susquehanna, PA 16th, that nobody, you know, really bid on it. But I thought that they were going to win. I have it, I think, number 50 on my most flippable district. And he's up by 2.1 with 77% in over Mike Kelly. So, you know, I just think that it's, yeah, it started out really disappointing. I actually was looking at the numbers for Donnelly, and I kind of was like saying, he's not looking so great. But I think it just shows that the divide, you know, between the rural areas and the urban areas are just wider than ever. And, you know, that obviously the Democrats are doing pretty well in the suburbs. I think they're going to hit their numbers, you know, or at least hit what has been projected anyway. And there's going to be some surprises. I mean, like I said, there already is the 11th. Both of those Virginia races, I didn't have them winning that. Kansas 2nd district, I didn't have them winning that. And I think it's, what, 60% in. I mean, that was an extreme toss-up race. 69% Paul Davis leads. So, I mean, yeah, it's been disappointing. I mean, Gillum was – I just thought he was going to be, you know, a possible, you know, presidential candidate, and he may well be because of his charisma. But, yeah, disappointed in the voters of Florida. I mean, obviously they had two seats in the House. There was Carlos Cobello, wasn't a definite thing. More people, and they won that one. And so, I mean, that's a nice pickup. Generally I'm pretty happy. Maine 2nd district, we have a lead on that. The Dayan was mentioned, the 14th district. I was talking about that a couple of days ago. Laura Underwood, that looks like she's going to win. She's up by 3 with 65% in Mindy's district. PA, Scott Wallace, up by 1.7 with 26% in. A lot of people had Fitzpatrick barely winning that race. The 10th district, Lizzie Pinnell Fletcher of Texas, just 10% in, but up by 4 over Culberson in the Houston suburbs. So, you know, I just think it's been okay. I mean, the governor's race is obviously Kobach winning. Great. I haven't actually
Kobach losing.
I really haven't been following what's happening with Scott Walker. Is that, let's
did
see,
Bryce
52%
lose?
In.
Yeah. Did Bryce lost?
I haven't seen anything. I haven't seen any numbers for him. I'm just looking. It's 52% in the governor's race. Evers up by 3.1, 45,000 votes. So that's looking pretty good. Let me see this Christy Nome race. Christy Nome up by 1.5 in South Dakota. Let's see. The Cordry, I guess, has that been – I don't think that's been called, right, but a seven-point lead, that's pretty bad.
Right.
I mean, it's just they're still going to have the house. They're going to have subpoena power. You know, things – it's going to be drastically different. I mean, I think that – I mean, of course you want to hope against hope and think that they can take the Senate. But, the rural roots, are strong in America. And one of the things that, I kind of railed against Dave Wasserman's piece that he put out last August, I was mostly angry about it because he was like saying that this is the most the map for the Republicans is going to be so hard to beat, in the Senate, for a long time. And, and he compared it to it was even worse in the 20s, which is ridiculous. But I mean, I have to say that he's got a point there. I mean, you think about Indiana, you think about Missouri, Florida, still deep in the South, not really coming
John,
through.
I mean, I don't mean to interrupt you. With 92% reporting, I'm not sure who this is from, but Brian Stell has been declared the winner with almost 55% over Randy Bryce, who came in at 43%.
Yeah.
I mean, crush.
Oh. Okay. Yeah, yeah. I mean, he was one of the main people, obviously, that I was promoting. Kari Eastman is down only by 4 with 63% in. Here's an interesting. Well, it's only 5% in, but McMurray leads Collins in the see if the people who are going to get indicted, are going to possibly lose.
You're talking about Chris Collins up in New York, upstate New York.
27th, right, in the 27th district. Now, Brandisi is looking real good.
Richard Ojeda.
He lost.
He lost 58% to 42%. There's a problem because the candidates who the left were determined were going to win. I mean, I can tell you, and I take no joy in this at all. I mean, obviously this is upsetting to me, but so much was put on the back of Richard Ojeda as being the model. I presume that there were polls. Maybe there wasn't. I mean, I don't know who's polling a House district in West Virginia. I don't know where the money's involved in that. Who's sinking money into that poll. But he lost by 8 points. And so the narrative of that simply you can overcome this tribalism. And you can say that tribalism is rooted in one thing or another. Maybe it's rooted in a certain amount of racism. Hard to imagine it's not, because you'd have to overlook a whole lot of it to consider yourself a member of that tribe. But to say that you can overcome this tribalism with, economic populism, there's no evidence that we're seeing that works.
Well. Just to slightly refine that, because I think Dane was saying this earlier, and I agree with him, and it actually does track the much more limited version of that argument, which is that specifically for a very small amount of voters in the Rust Belt states, it might play some role in terms of mitigating Trump's influence. And so
in the
Baldwin,
Rust Belt,
Baldwin, Sherrod right. Brown, and those races and a sort of return to Democratic voting patterns might indicate that. I don't think there's any
doubt that
in the South.
But what he was saying was that he was saying that they were actually being damaged by Trump in terms of the trade, right? Like, it wasn't necessarily they were attracted to policy. They were just mad at somebody for effing them over.
Right.
So I'm not saying that people aren't sensitive.
And they were brought in by that con
right.
in 2016, and now they're coming back.
Right.
I think the people but in these like, are places two different, like West, well, that's what I'm saying.
These are two different things.
Right, right, right.
I mean, I'm saying that the strategy or the tactic of simply providing populism to certain, to think that that's going to win over certain tribal people, that isn't necessarily the case.
Definitely
now,
not.
If people are specifically effed over by a certain candidate, they may still react against that candidate.
And specifically some of the types of voters we saw in the Rust Belt, super specifically.
But, I mean, Ojeda, I've heard so many people talk about Ojeda.
That was always, I mean, he ran a great campaign, but to me, like, one of the reasons I never went in all in on that, I mean, I shouted him out and I thought he did a good job, but it's like, there is a, I think obviously you can't just say that we're not going to compete in places and try to win. And I still think that both morally and politically, universal programs are absolutely the right way to go, among other things you have to do.
I totally.
And I know you agree with that, but there is a fixation that some people have on, like, going to like the heart of enemy territory. And like, for what it's worth, like, you know, Trumpistas are not figuring out how to get like George McGovern out of the state, you know, out of the House in Massachusetts, right? Like, winning as a Democrat in West Virginia, apparently, unless you're Joe Manchin, is super fucking hard.
Right.
And I wouldn't hinge, like, I don't hinge my argument for democratic socialism and Bernie Sanders on Richard Ojeda figuring out how to win an unbelievably improbable race. And I appreciated him and I wanted to give him props. But I think races like that are where people on our side need to think a little bit more strategically about where we're looking for case studies.
Yeah, I agree. John, anything else okay, well, now somebody reminds me that Ojeda made up 40-some-odd points in a Republican district.
Sure. It's great.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's great.
It's not a win.
but it's not a win.
Right.
And it there's no guarantee that he would do that in a 48-52 district, because the dynamics are clearly
right.
different
right.
in that district.
Right.
Right. And so, you know, that's great that he lost less than somebody else may, you know, might have in a specific district. There's a differential, but at the end of the day, that doesn't really, that may suggest that maybe you shouldn't be focusing on the 50 on West Virginia.
I think that these economic left arguments are really vital and relevant for the Rust Belt, which is vital and relevant. And I think, like, I mean, I don't want to say, like, I don't want to say forget West Virginia, because I know, like,
well,
what's
that guy?
But it shouldn't be the focus of our electoral energy.
If that differential is what you're going to hang your hat on,
right,
then Joe Manchin is an amazing model.
Right.
Because Donald Trump also cleaned up in West Virginia.
Of course.
And Joe Manchin outperformed Hillary Clinton 100%. Significantly.
And then
his
the lessons
politics
from that
worse
are
than
terrible.
Hers.
Well, the lessons from that are catastrophic.
Right.
So, you know, yes.
John, what else you got? What else should
but
we
maybe
be looking
Sherrod
at?
Maybe Sherrod Brown having a great reelect. That's what people right. should be talking about.
Well, I just think that it's, you know, if you look at Bernie's main, you know, energy, you know, it came from rural areas. And I think it's just, you know, I was hoping, you know, that he would come really close, and maybe he will in some of those rural districts, you know, but most of them, you know, that I've seen so far, you know, those candidates haven't done well. And so then you have the people who, you know, who won, Ocasio-Cortez, you know, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, Ayanna Pressley, and they're all from urban areas. And so, you know, I was like trying to pick out, you know, people who were really progressive from these tipping point areas, and it was really kind of hard to find. I mean, Katie Porter and Sean McElwain mentioned Colin Allred and Harder, you know, in the 10th District of California. But, I mean, you know, we just really, you know, need to be realistic about, you know, where we stand and just keep pushing for our ideas. And, you know, 2020 in the primaries, you know, don't give up. I mean, this
oh,
is...
Oh, right. No, of course.
you know, I mean, it's just going to, this is just one continual push, you know, to make progressives, you know, win. And so, I mean, that's what I think we should be looking at. But, yeah, I mean, some of these losses are pretty harsh in the Senate and obviously, you know, with in Georgia and, you know, and possibly Florida. So it's obviously a mixed night. But in the end, you know, Trump won't be, you know, he doesn't get a mandate, even though he's going to consider it a mandate. But I mean, we'll see when the subpoenas start flying. I mean, it'll change things. You know, there's no doubt about that. And I hope they actually have some gumption and try to enforce this. But I mean, you know, this could be the next constitutional crisis, though. I mean, how well is he going to comply with subpoenas? I mean,
right.
Talked about so
not
I mean,
so fucking
I mean,
good, John. Not so fucking
John,
good.
Appreciate the call, buddy. Thanks, man.
But okay, thank you.
Can I just also reiterate
subpoenas?
You know what? I mean, just again, because I think like we're some people are slightly not on this show, but I'm just noticing a lot of despair. And winning the House is really not nothing. And you said last year that people were worried about Sherrod Brown, which is true. People were worried about Elizabeth Warren for a minute over a year ago. Like
yeah, that's true. No.
This is not. Like, I think that this is not a nightmare done, we're over catastrophe, and it's really not great.
It's an unpleasant dream that ends up kind of, like, fine.
Yeah, I mean, yes, and also, like, this is the political project of our lives.
Right.
I mean, I don't, like, sorry. I don't.
It's going to be a long haul,
this is going to be a long haul.
We won't
between,
be young
like,
when we
the breakdown
win.
Of the global economy and well. Ascendant global, you know, authoritarian politics. Like, and the fact that. You know.
Well, it's like the thing. With, yeah. I mean, just to go back to the race and economics thing. Like, I think you actually can understand racism by looking at it from a Marxist distribution of labor thing historically. But that has been brewing for like four right. centuries.
Right. Exactly.
So, like, some policy prescription or like is not by any Democrat is not going to address that in any meaningful way.
Not at all.
Except in certain marginal areas, and that doesn't mean it's not the right thing to do and what like the thing we should be voting for. We just shouldn't. Expect it to deliver us Congress.
Yes,
there's no.
That is the frustrating
there's
thing.
No silver
is that,
bullet.
Yes,
there's
that
no.
There is this listen. Sort of. There is a desperate desire, and I certainly understand that desire, to have a one size fits all, tactical, set of positions, that are going to win elections, and that's just simply not the case. You need to build power step by step, layer by layer, leverage what you have to build upon that. And that's basically the bottom line. Let's go here. Wait a second. There's so many callers on the line that I can't even. It's nuts. Hold on for a second. It's hard for me to bear with me. I had a caller queued up. And I'm trying to find that caller. I think they dropped. Let's go to 303. Calling from a 303 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Brittany. I'm calling from Denver.
Hi, Brittany.
I've been listening to you guys. Hi. I've been listening to you guys like every day for the past 2.5 years. Well, not every day, so... Thanks for walking me through my second election. Now this is super stressful.
Yes.
I've been on an emotional roller coaster in the last 2 hours. I've been on hold, so I'm not really sure what to talk about anymore. But I do want to just tell Michael, he's being like a little bit of a bully lately. And I think as a social justice warrior on the left, I got to tell you, everyone's nervous on the phone. You got to stop laughing at him.
Oh, for laughing
so
anyway, at the phone. I cannot
everybody.
Promise that my social justice warriorhood will apply to call behavior. Hard non-commitment on that one. But I'm not laughing at you so
All
far.
All right, but don't be giving these young boys any more reason to think that maybe the right's a better place
yeah,
to hang out
incels,
is all I'm saying.
Oh, I'm making incels.
I had a really traumatic majority report call. I'm joining a Nazi forum.
I've heard crazier things.
Yeah, right.
Feeling bad for a lot of people who try and call in. But anyway.
This is definitely top concern tonight.
I mean, no, but don't you want to be more inviting?
In a certain sense. I mean, perhaps I could have been more inviting, Brittany, but there might have also been an onslaught. So perhaps not.
Good news is, Jared Polis, your governor.
Yeah, you got a good governor.
I did. And you want, okay, so here's what I called to talk to you guys about. Sorry, okay. I'm deep into this numbing, so I've had a couple drinks. But,
yes, you and Michael are both, I think, three sheets. But go ahead.
I'm from Kansas, small town Kansas. I have a super liberal immediate family, thank God, but all of my extended family is super hard right, which is very difficult. But I've also just find myself to be attracted to men who remind me of, you know, what I grew up around. So I tend to date conservative men.
Ooh.
And my only deal is you can't. I know, this is a problem.
I'm sorry,
for me.
I'm laughing.
So you
I'm
can't,
sorry.
But. Well, the thing is I was already dating someone when I, you know, found out that they had voted for Trump because they'll lie to you about it. But he doesn't really care about politics. But I do feel like people on the right tend to just vote right all the time. So by just blowing these people off and saying you can't talk to these people is, I think, the wrong attitude because of him. My boyfriend, anyway, sorry, voted for Trump. But with him, I just talk to him about it every day, everything on the news. I show it to him. I make him look at it with me. I tell him why I'm upset about it, especially with this Kavanaugh stuff, with all this recent racist stuff with Trump. And today was the last day to turn your ballot in. We have take home ballots in Colorado so you can, you know, do them at home. And he asked me to sit down and look at it with him and which, you know, asked me which ones that I thought were important. And he voted Democrat on all of them. So,
well, I mean, I think
you
that's,
can change people's minds.
You can. I mean, but it sounds like you have to date them for a while.
Yeah, I was gonna say. And, do you have like a deployment strategy for endlessly patient girlfriends?
I just want to say, when I hear
MAGA,
people on here all the time or who are like, these people are never going to change.
Well,
you
Brittany,
can't get to them.
But here's,
I do think a lot of people just vote the line all the time.
I agree with
and
you.
And clearly, if we give up on people, we're going to lose. We are.
Well,
barely hanging on as it is.
But wait a second. Mm. Let me just push back on that. Because the question isn't we're not making some type of like, well, maybe some people are, but moral proclamation. The question is you have a certain amount of resources.
But they're not.
Well, Brittany, hold on for one sec.
That's what you don't understand.
Well, I didn't say anything, so I don't know what it is that I don't understand.
Hey, be nice to callers, Sam.
But, do you think they're making a moral proclamation?
No,
there are people
Brittany,
who just
Brittany,
vote
you're misunderstanding what I'm saying. I'm not talking people. I'm not talking about people like your boyfriend. I'm talking about people who say we should forget those people. I'm saying the people who say on this program and in other areas, we shouldn't try and convince those people. We should look for other people. They're not making a moral proclamation. They're making an assessment of what is the most efficient deployment of resources. So now for you, you're dating this guy. So you have access to him every day and you have a certain amount of leverage with him. If I saw him maybe once a week at class or every day at work, I wouldn't have the same leverage as he does. But people who might be more inclined, people who might be more inclined to agree with me, the argument is that we want to go and bring more people into the electorate and motivate them and convince them, because you don't have to persuade those people. All you have to do is motivate them. And it's a little bit easier than actually trying to persuade people who have, all of these pre-existing, tribal affiliations. That's the point. I mean,
okay, you're right. I do understand that. But here's, you're right. I went a little hard on that point again. I've had a couple of drinks. I panicked. I didn't know where to go.
Brittany, no,
here's
it's okay.
Here's the point I want to make now.
All right, make the point.
There's a lot
quickly,
of ladies out there who are dating men or who could be dating men who are Trump supporters. And I'm saying pick one and turn them. We got to do it now.
All
We're
right.
running out of time.
Fair enough. Right, there you go.
Get out there.
and I'm defenseless yeah, I like against that kind of female insanity.
I love the arc of that call. Like, first of all, Michael, be nice. You might create incels and women. You really need to go out and date these fucking Trump people. So, because the fate of humanity rests right. on you converting some MAGA chuds.
Right. I mean, it's a slower project. It's a longer term project to actually breed out all the Trump supporters.
I mean, I think there's a sort of the ones that are close to you. Yeah, you can try to turn those guys. But generally, you're going to be in for frustration, right? Unless you're like literally sleeping with them.
I also thought it was funny how she asked me not to laugh. And I was like, I have a certain amount of leverage, my boyfriend.
Calling from an 859 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
This is David. David Goodwin from Kentucky Four.
David, what's going on? David?
So the race down in Kentucky Six, I really think that there was a lot of effort put into that because, you know, you've got an incumbent, you've got a new candidate. The president had to show up personally to get that in the bag, and it only switched by a couple of points. So that's Kentucky Six. But getting back to the point of communicating to the other side from your guys' perspective, I guess a couple things. Like, one, up here in Kentucky Four, you know, we have a Tea Party guy, we've got a Libertarian guy. And when you look at the stats, it appears that he votes with Democrats more than Republicans, but that's not really the case. He's voting very strong Libertarian stuff. What I don't think that the electorate cares or understands is that he votes against the president a lot. And that's something that I sort of see different from the left and the right is that, you know, there's a spectrum of left and right. But when you look at where the right is at the moment, you've got this Trump thing going on, which you can say is part of the right. And then you've got this old Tea Party thing that they started 6-8 years ago. Those two things are very different, and I know when you put them on a line, they both look like right, but they're different, and they don't help each other, which is why they've gotten nothing done. And then just one more point before you jump in. So I went all up and down this district during this election, and I do think that on certain issues, people are going to the left, like even like the establishment Republicans here were behind him. Several years ago, I saw many local Republicans behind legalization of marijuana, at least medicinally. So there's certain issues where I think the world's going to the left, but I don't think that that means that they're going to go to the left on everything.
Yeah. And well, let me just jump in here. Two things. One is, I think it is the case that more people who support marijuana legalization are to the left than to the right. But that position is really, it's just people coming around on a commodity. You know, I mean, honestly, like at the end of the day, it's not, there's not much, there's like old vestiges from the 60s of tribalism there. It is not, you know, the ability of the conservatives to essentially release the relevance of an issue is, I think we can't overestimate. I mean, we saw it with the deficit. I think you're right in terms of there's these sort of so-called Tea Party strains and Trump strains, but this idea that they can't get anything done, what are they trying to get done? Like the agenda of both of these groups at the end of the day is to destroy government, and they're doing a great job of that. They are packing the judiciary, the federal judiciary, with judges who do not think that government has the ability to do most of the things it does, and will slowly chip away at that. They are giving more power to corporations. They have the tax bill that passed completely favors money over labor. They have been able to destroy public sector, or at least one of the key means in which public sector unions fund themselves. I mean, they've done a lot. And I don't know what the other agenda that people think that the right has. I mean, they want to get rid of Obamacare, but not based upon any ideological grounds, or even it's just because that they said that they wanted to. And it makes it seem like they should do something. But at the end of the day, like, their agenda is pretty simple. It is a destructive one when it comes to government. And it's one to just empower corporations and money. And they've done that.
And caller, if you have a girl you're dating who might be a Republican, that is exactly the type of tirades you should give her every single day to actually flip her into the Democratic Party.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Let me just say, 100% pro legal weed, but like John Boehner's on the board of a marijuana company. Like, this is not a radical thing at all anymore.
Of course,
it's even being separated from a broader ending of the drug war. I mean, it's not a thing.
Calling from a 509 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hey, Sam.
Yeah.
Sam.
Yes.
This is Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan, how are you? What's on your mind?
Who's winning?
Mike Espy is taking the Mississippi Senate race to a runoff.
No, I just mean, like, are we winning or what?
I mean, yeah, we are. You can.
I haven't been listening at all. I just tuned in. Can you get me caught up?
When was the last time you tuned in? Well, how many months ago?
I honestly don't even really know who the candidates are. I'm playing Legos right now, and can you text me after? I gotta go.
Okay. Appreciate the call.
Okay, bye.
Bye bye. Oh boy. Yeah. Democrats so far have a net gain of 16 House seats. Obviously, they need 22, but people projecting they're going to get that, or 23, I should say. Calling from a 215 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, what's up, Sam? How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
Good, man. This is Eric from Philadelphia. Big fan, man.
Oh, well, thank you, Eric. I appreciate that. What's on your mind?
And big fan of Mike, too. He's hilarious.
Well, I appreciate that a little bit less, but nevertheless.
Oh, always with the resentment. Just...
Well, after seeing what's been going on around the country, my topic, well, what I was going to comment on has changed. I know this might sound bad or sound pretty racist, but the biggest victims of white supremacy are poor white people.
There's
I don't
some,
understand.
There's some
like
poor
Andrew
black
Gillum.
People that might disagree with you on that, Paisan. Let's not go with that track. Let's not do that. No doubt.
No, I'm saying that as a black person.
Yeah.
Like they're voting in that panhandle. Though? Andrew Gillum was clearly the better choice, not because he was a Democrat, but because he was for everybody. And DeSantis had shown on stage he has zero composure. He can't even answer questions. He's incompetent.
I would say this. I think that there is an argument. And, you know, this came up in the conversation I had with Carol Anderson about who wrote White Rage and wrote One Person, No Vote. And we were talking about in the antebellum South, post Reconstruction. The white upper class basically made the decision, like, look, we're going to disenfranchise white poor people with our poll tax too, but that's okay. Like, that's the way that we're going to get black people not to be able to vote, and same with literacy tests. And we're also going to disenfranchise poor white people, but that's okay. And that dynamic where white people living in poverty pay for white supremacy, I think that's true. But I also think that that's different than saying that they're the biggest victims of it, because you're still walking around society as a black guy, and there's a whole nother set of things that I'm sure I don't need to tell you
fair
about
enough.
That you are going to deal with, right? But I think the notion,
like being fucking cool.
No, but the notion the notion that white that there are groups of white people who and they may not realize it and they may get something from it, you know, emotionally on some level, but they certainly suffer in, you know, in a material way because of white supremacy, because they are, you know, it's like you go fishing, you know, you cast a net for dolphin and you get you cast a net for tuna and you get dolphin in there.
Got some marlins,
you know,
in
like
there.
The idea is that you're, you know, that's just the price of doing business. But I think your point's a good one.
Yeah, it's. I'm sorry if I explained it poorly. I've been drinking heavily.
I think
it just bugs me that someone will vote against their interest. Like, you work in a sardine factory in rural whatever, and you think you're voting against me because you think I'm going to get something for the government. I never got any of that free stuff I was promised from Obama. Apparently, all this free stuff, I was supposed to be getting cell phones and
Eric, yes.
healthcare and all this.
Eric, you didn't get the right coupon code.
Gillum is giving his concession speech right now. I just want to hear Gillum. I appreciate the call, Eric. Here we go. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Sam.
Getting us where
Thanks.
It is that we need to be as a state. Y'all, I want to encourage you not to give up. I want to encourage you to stick to the fight. I want you to know that every step of this way, even though I won't have the blessing of serving as the next governor of the state of Florida, I still plan to be on the front lines right alongside every single one of you when it comes to standing up for what it is that we believe in. As I said all along the campaign trail, power sees nothing without a demand. It never has and it never will. We still have to be willing to show up every single day and demand our seat at the table. We got to be willing, inside of elections and outside of elections, to say that our voices still matter, that we still have relevance. I still believe and I still trust the voters. We may not have all shown up in the way that we thought and hoped that we would, but I still believe that there are still more of us who believe in what is common and what is decent and what is right. And I believe in the long run, good always wins out over evil. I still believe that. Many of you all along the trail heard me talk rather repeatedly about my grandmother. Someone pointed out that she was the real winner of the governor's race. My grandmother, who poured so much into us, because my mother and father, as I would often share, would have to get up so early in the morning and go off to work, they would load us up in the car and take us over to my grandmama's house where we would sleep just a little bit longer. And my grandmother would often have a ritual. It was a two-step ritual. The first phase of that is that she'd grab her bottle of olive oil, sometimes cooking oil, whatever the shiniest oil was that she can get her hands on. And she would build a cross across my forehead. It was her way of sending us out into the day with a blessing that no harm would come our way. And then she would have this refrain where she would say, "Boy, go to school. Mind your teachers. Get your lesson. And one day bring that education home." She would say, "Bring it home for your little brother and your little sister who don't know what it is yet. Bring it home. Bring it home for that little boy down the street that you play with. God knows where he's going to end up. Bring it home." She said, "Bring it home for your mama and for your daddy who get out there every single day going to work on somebody else's job in order to keep a roof over your head and clothes on your back and food on the table. Bring it home." As I shared with you on the campaign trail, I didn't always know what my grandmother was trying to communicate, but I would come to learn that what she was saying is that it wasn't just about me. Y'all, I'm reminded this evening that it is not about me. That it's not about my wife, not Chris King, not Kristen. This is about all of us. This is about the collective. This is about the belief that if we all do good, we can all do good. And we can do good by doing good. That if we all put our oars in the water and row in the same direction, that we can all get further than by ourselves. I still believe that to be true this evening. Even in defeat, I believe that to be true. The question is, we have a choice to make tomorrow morning. Are we going to wake up and bask in sorrow and defeat? Or are we going to get up and reassert ourselves to the mission at hand? Are we going to get up and fight for the things that we believe in? Are we going to get up and say that we still deserve our seat at the table? Look, I said before that I believe that we have to have a table in this state that is long enough, that is wide enough, that is deep enough to fit all of us. I still believe that we got to have that table. But y'all, we're just going to have to do a little bit more work in order to build that table. We're going to have to do a little bit more in order to make our way to it. If there's not a chair there for us, let's pull up our own folding chair.
Let's show our work here a little bit. Here's what just happened. We got alerted that Gillum was giving the speech. We're calling DeSantis the apparent winner in Florida. Though this had not happened, we had not called the race before the speech started. And let right. us recap.
That's not terribly interesting to us. In New York's 19th, Delgado wins over Faso. This is the race that, this is the district that Zephyr Teachout lost to Faso last go through. Bursars had put in a ton of money, $7 billion into this district, which is just stunning to me, knowing that district quite well. It is pretty rural. Like, I don't, $7 billion could do a lot in just any one of the parts of those of that district. But Delgado wins. This was a very racially charged race. And by racially charged, I mean Faso was incredibly racist with his electioneering. Referred to him as the rapper. This is the guy who I think like...
Is a Rhodes Scholar or yes. something similar?
Mm. But he also raps.
His second LP was called the Rhodes Scholar. It was about...
spelled R-O-A-D. Yeah.
Oh. Brat looks like he may be... They just called it for Brat. I mean, they just called later, it for... I'm sorry, Spanberger. Dave Brat goes down. Pickup. That's a big pickup.
Bye, motherfucker. Goodbye, asshole. Republican incumbent. She is going to
lose to Anthony Brindisi. That's great.
Hey, Anthony Brindisi over here. John Faso, Republican
incumbent, losing to Antonio
Delgado. Of course, the ads... That's hip-hop. Dipset. ...against Delgado
in this campaign. Swapping one good Colgate person for a bad one.
...is going to win there. The 6th District of Illinois outside Chicago... be defeated. The 1st District of Iowa, this is one of those places that surged by double digits towards Donald Trump in 2016. Northeast Iowa, Rod Blum, Republican incumbent, he is going to lose. Abby Finkenauer, I think she was poised to be the youngest woman ever elected to Congress, and then you had that big upset in Joe Crowley's district earlier this year. I think she will now become the second youngest woman ever. That pick up as well. There's also, we can tell you about New Jersey's 2nd District here. Jeff Van Drew has declared victory, according to the Philadelphia Inquirer here. But Seth Grossman, this is an interesting story that is this close. Seth Grossman was disowned by the National Republican Party and denounced by the chairman of the New Jersey State Republican Party for racist and bigoted comments. The words
and then he
Jersey
gained
Republican
5
chairman,
points amongst
the
Republicans.
The fact that it's sitting at 50-48, and we haven't officially called it at this point at this hour, is somewhat noteworthy. But if Van Drew does hang on in our projection, then that would be a Democratic pickup there as well. Also, just coming across the wire, the 7th District of Texas.
Wow. This is there's a lot of places in Texas.
Suburban. This is another one of those.
Texas
I can show
is going to go
on the screen
blue.
Here. A Hillary Clinton district in 2016 flips to the Democrat. Lizzie Fletcher taking out John Culberson. You want to go way back in time, a half a century, when the Republican Party was in its infancy in Texas. Where did it have one of its first big breakthroughs? It was in this district.
Interesting.
And it was by a man named George H.W. Bush, who won a House seat here. About 50 50 years ago. Seat's been Republican since then. No longer. Democrat Lizzie Fletcher takes that one
David
over.
David Copperfield.
So, and we have also, we said there were a couple of seats here that Republicans were targeting, that were Democratic seats that Republicans were targeting. One more Republicans have picked up. This is the 8th District of Minnesota.
What did I say?
This is the Iron Range. This is an area that really swung hard
you
to Donald
kind
Trump
of
in 2016. Blue-collar, traditionally Democratic, swung hard to Trump.
You said Capafield.
You said Capafield. A former hockey player there, Pete Stauber, wins it. So
all right,
I wish we had
let's
that
go to the phones. So Democrats, you know, it's too difficult right at the moment to sort of break down exactly, but there's clearly a different pattern here than I think people anticipate.
Steve King's still winning.
Steve King is still winning, Mindy?
Jesus.
Oh, Sam, can you hear me? Did you hear me the whole time?
Yeah, no, Mindy, yes. We've been listening to everything that's been going on in your house for the past 25 minutes.
We've been simulcasting with you.
Are you fucking kidding me?
No.
Oh, my God.
We've been simulcasting.
Okay. Oh, my God, I'm so embarrassed.
Well,
okay,
some of the things you said, Mindy, were
pretty...
I was
drunk, and now I'm not.
Okay. Every single person who's gone into the show has been drunk.
What?
But now not.
How long were you listening to me for?
A while, Mindy. Look, don't worry about it.
About a half hour.
No one's going to remember this tomorrow. Well, maybe.
I'm so embarrassed. So, no, I was drunk, and now I'm not. But,
how did
you
sober up?
We had no right. We had no right requesting. I mean... We were gonfs with the Senate. We knew we weren't going to get it. I mean, we're taking the House. That's really good. It's keeping everybody in the game. We're still going to be engaged. I mean, I'm upset about Gillum. I'm upset about Stacey Abrams and upset about Beto. But, you know, the country's just not there yet. I mean... It's fucked up, but they're not. And we just got to wait it out a little longer. We took some really good seats. We lost David Bratt. Who else did we lose? We picked up Spamberger. We lost the chick in my area, the Chinese chick that was running against the other chick in my area who was running as a Republican. God, it was ridiculous. I think my neighbor's losing.
Yeah!
That's great.
Fuck your neighbor. Fuck your neighbor.
I think my right. No, I think my neighbor's losing. And who else lost? We lost Faso.
Right.
We lost Cumberson. Wait, who else do we lose? We picked up a lot of really good governors.
It's better than 538.
I think we should be happy.
There's a guy.
So much better than 538.
Gavin Newsom.
So much better than 538.
They're already talking about knocking on the door for his tax returns.
That's right.
I mean, we are going to de-ball him for the next 2 years. It's going to be fine.
We're going to what?
De-ball him.
Oh, de-ball him. Okay.
De-ball him.
I understand.
Well, if he has balls anyway.
Right. They're probably inverted, right? They're probably not even on the outside.
I don't know. Does he even have them? Seriously.
Not, yeah.
Does he even know he has them? We're going to make him so crazy. I mean... It's just crazier. It's going to be great. We're going to have a great time with this. Everybody needs to be optimistic.
Well,
this is going to work out good for us.
Okay. Well, all right. Connor
don't be
Lally
rude.
Wins again.
Don't be That's rude. Good. Don't. I don't want to turn Mindy into an incel.
What?
Well.
What?
Mindy.
Mindy.
What?
Anything
what?
Else?
I'm here.
No. Great. Great. This is
how's the voodoo doll going, Mindy?
Yeah, what's been going on with the voodoo doll?
Forget, I gave up on the voodoo doll. At the beginning, it was so confusing. You couldn't like figure they were like not telling us who was getting seats. So I was like trying to make charts with different colored Sharpies. Well, I was trying to be Tim Russert. It wasn't working out. So I don't know how.
Tim Russert right. never did that kind of stuff. But that's I get your point.
Tim Russert didn't do voodoo dolls.
We didn't.
He just said, like, now on the last time you were on Beat the Press, I gave you one prick for lying about your stance on the capital gains.
Mindy, I think your words are words to live by. People should keep their heads up. I mean, I think there was a lot of, like, emotion invested in the idea of Stacey Abrams winning or Andrew Gillum winning or Beto O'Rourke winning. Or 2 out of 3, I think I was telling myself, like, that would be amazing. And I think, you know, there people are really, really thirsty for you know, some type of real significant victory. And we may just have to settle with, you know, this somewhat incremental. But like you say, the dynamic has changed. This is going to mitigate some of the damage that Donald Trump could do. Not, certainly not nearly all the damage. In some ways, this will not make a huge difference. It's just against the counterfactual of them losing the House and validating the last 2 years would have been indescribably bad. So, Mindy, you're right. And you
wait,
know,
wait, last thing. Yeah. Just remember this, too. A lot of the senators, like Joe Donnelly and Bill Nelson, they weren't real great senators. I mean, I know they were Democratic senators, but they weren't Andrew Gillum. They weren't Stacey Abrams. They weren't Beto. I mean, you know, we can come back with them. They were just bodies filling D seats.
Yeah, no, I agree. We're going to want those
Tell
bodies.
Tell us how the Chinese chick did tomorrow, please.
Yeah, I tweeted about her already. I already told her.
Make a reverse.
She had no shot. She was, like, totally on the wrong team. She was cute, though.
All right. Well, Mindy.
I have to say one last thing since I'm semi-drunk. My transgender joke was not a transgender joke.
All right. Right.
Yeah, we love you, Mindy. Talk to you soon.
Mindy.
Love you.
Thank you for calling. Bye. Good night.
Jesus. Ooh. Make a shrine to Ruth Bader Ginsburg to keep her alive in the meantime.
You know, spelling that out sounds somewhat invidious, and we don't really have time to clean up the mess.
Oh, geez.
Oh, my God.
All right. Let's take a couple more phone calls. What do we got? Another, like, 15, 20 minutes? And then our stream dies. So we have 12 minutes? All right. We got time for one more call. I mean, we have callers who have been on the line for over 2 hours. We still have 50. I guess 50 is the max in which can hold on to the line at any given time. Call from a 205 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from? Yeah, this guy got, they were smart. They skedaddled. Calling from a 702 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hey, it's Marco from, Las Vegas.
What's on your mind, Marco? Gotta be quick.
For me, it's, this thing that, everybody's doesn't have confidence in that the country is more progressive than it is. I have this issue with gerrymandering. I think that's the main issue. I don't know what your guys' thought on it was, but is there any way that we can fight this? Like what the House can do, or how do we fix that issue? That's what I believe in. That.
Well, I mean, really, there's only one way to fix it. I mean, Marco, I mean, you're right. It is an issue, and it's going to be, and I appreciate the call. And we're going to see you tomorrow. Maybe a day or two, we will see the difference between the percentage of votes nationally that Democrats won in congressional races and the number of races that they won and where they land in terms of representation. So, in other words, if it's 230 to 190s, whatever, I can't do the math right now. The percentage, we'll see how the votes match up with that percentage. But the fact is, the only thing you can do about it is to win state houses. Take another quick one. Call from a 571 area code. Who's this?
Hello?
Hello? Who's this?
Hey, Shay. I didn't think I would get on. No, yeah, this is Caldwell from Virginia.
What's up?
Take your time.
Hey, yeah, sorry. No, don't worry, Mike. I'll be quick. Two quick things. Why don't you think that net neutrality is a wedge issue for Democrats. Like earlier, you were talking about we need all this systemic issues fixed, voter suppression, all that stuff, right? But to do that, we need power. Why don't Democrats have a wedge issue that they keep coming back to in order to get that power to fix those systemic issues?
I think net neutrality, it can be semi-effective, but, you know, I think most people don't know about net neutrality. And so, you know, healthcare seems to me to be a pretty good issue. I mean, in terms of net neutrality, where it would work, I mean, what House districts are you talking about? What states do you think that net neutrality would be a wedge issue in?
I'm in Virginia 1, so I'm pretty close to D.C. This area is a pretty big tech sector.
Yeah, Virginia could be.
I just feel like if it's explained well,
I think it would get a large
amount of the younger people.
I think Virginia is one of the few states that it could theoretically gain you some traction, but I think that's pretty rare, to be honest with you. And so, I mean, I think, you know, that's basically it. I mean, you know, net neutrality is a perfect example of an issue that garners a lot of attention when you have a Democratic in the White House.
That's exactly right.
I appreciate the call, though.
I'll tell you what, thanks. I'm pretty concerned about this Guatemalan caravan that's going to turn us into an Islamic Republic. But on the other hand, the bisexual Democratic candidate is into protecting the open pipelines and the internet, so there isn't a corporate monopoly. I'm going to flip my vote on that.
Yeah,
Debbie won. That's all right. Debbie Stabenow returns to the Senate.
All right, folks. Listen, I am sorry, but I think we have run out of time. In about 5 minutes, we're going to lose our stream, and we will lose. They don't even record this video, and we've had that happen to us.
You can only go back 4 hours.
And so we don't want that to happen. We will be here tomorrow, noon. Subscribe to this channel if you don't already subscribe to this channel. We do live shows every day, noon Eastern. And of course, we have a bunch of other videos on this program on Tuesday nights, usually when we don't have midterms. The Michael Brooks Show happens live 7 p.m. Eastern every Tuesday. There'll be a special edition this Sunday.
There's going to be a special edition next Friday. And Sunday's the patron content with Bill Fletcher Jr.
Not live.
No. Two live shows next week, Tuesday and Friday.
Tuesday and Friday next week. All right, folks. Thanks so much for joining us. We will see you. Oh, Jesus.
Could you have at least spared us that before we signed out? Or at least just do the Sam Harris drop over it.
All right,
But it's not true. I mean, we won the House.
It's true.
Guys.
Like, it's true. It's so true. Tremendous.
No, but there's too
success.
Many people on our side. The election results tonight are complex and in some ways terrible and in some ways actually good.
Yeah.
The House is really not nothing. I think people.
Oh, no. It's huge. I think there's people, you know.
I'm
going to sleep a lot better tonight than I did when I went home in 2016. Let's say that.
Well, that's true.
We won the House. It's not nothing.
Now, with that said, the next 3 months are going to be. Two and a half months are going to be an absolute crap show.
Yes.
So buckle up, folks. I think things are going to get absolutely insane over the next 2 months. That's my humble prediction. Tomorrow is Mueller time.
Indeed.
And we will see you at 12 noon. Bye-bye.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want. But I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And my pilot light shining bright. I get somewhere the choice is made. For the option where you don't get paid. For the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I get somewhere I lost my drive. Between the 101 and the 5. Do you know? listening to you while I shifted in and out of gear, waiting for my moment to happen. I don't know how much longer I can stay in, or how much more I got to pay to play in. I know somehow I'm